enjoy your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery.
In PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit
the Central Avenue Bakery today.
173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Cammy McCormick. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is preparing to head to the Middle East on Sunday. CBS News reporter Charles Wolfson has more from the State Department.
Rice answered critics who say she already should have gone to the region to begin shuttle-style diplomacy. It took meetings over the past few days to begin to get a framework for what the secretary calls a durable and lasting peace.
What I won't do is go someplace and try to get a ceasefire that I know isn't going to last.
Rice said she'll work with other nations to create a robust international force in southern Lebanon to prevent Hezbollah from carrying out attacks. Charles Wolfson, CBS News, the State Department.
CBS News correspondent Dan Raviv has reaction from Tel Aviv.
Everything Rice said was exactly what Israel wanted to hear. No point of a ceasefire without lasting steps against terrorism. And Israel's top general, Dan Halutz, said the Secretary of State will be welcome when she comes to Israel early next week, but he added she doesn't have the right to stop the Israeli army. That's up to the Israeli government. There's almost universal support here for keeping on with the push against Hezbollah, but not a massive invasion.
I'm Robert Berger on the Israel-Lebanon border. 10 tanks are standing by here waiting for the order to move into Lebanon. That was the sound of Israeli artillery lobbing shells across the border. I can see the shells when they land. It makes a plume of smoke and fire. In fact, there are fires burning all over inside Israel and also in Lebanon from the shelling.
A powerful storm swept through the Midwest again today in St. Charles, Missouri. It left a mess behind. Mayor Patty York.
Street lights out. Traffic is a nightmare. People have all kind of left work and are trying to get home. We're putting up temporary stop signs as everywhere that we can.
And now even more people have lost power. Tim Fox is a spokesman for Ameren Power Company.
We currently have about 570,000 customers in Missouri and Illinois without service.
St. Louis was already under a state of emergency because thousands had lost power and a dangerous heat wave was continuing. A former Navy Academy quarterback acquitted of raping a female midshipman will not face any punishment. Lamar Owens was convicted of lesser charges.
You got to remember that passengers are the future of this business.
Oscar-nominated actor Jack Warden has died. One of his most famous roles was in Shampoo alongside Warren Beatty. His breakthrough role was 1957's 12 Angry Men.
He presented himself as a kind of everyman. I think that's why everybody could relate to him.
Film critic Leonard Maltin, Warden was 85. On Wall Street today, the Dow finished the week on a sour note, down 59 points at 10,868, and the Nasdaq was off by 19. This is CBS News.
Where do you want to be?
Everybody has a different idea of the perfect home.
Now that the kids are grown, we want a smaller place.
We really need more room. There's a baby on the way.
I'll take a place with a garage for my new baby.
Find your perfect place. It's easy at REMAX.com. Now REMAX.com has more home listings to choose from than ever. Nobody sells more real estate than REMAX. Each office independently owned and operated.
I found a great summer hotel deal.
Let me guess, your parents' house?
No, Priceline has the top 50 vacation spots up to 50% off.
Places we actually want to go?
Soho, New York.
Yeah?
The Strip in Vegas.
Ooh.
Waikiki, Hawaii.
Up to 50% off?
When you name your own price. Check out all 50 spots on Priceline.
I'm guessing your parents' house didn't make the list.
The 50-50 hotel savings event, only on Priceline. More ways to save. Exact hotel shown only after purchase.
What have we learned from past hurricanes? One major lesson, according to congressional investigators, is that transportation is key, especially for nursing homes and hospitals.
It's not the getting there, but the going that's neglected. The investigative arm of Congress, finding Homeland Security and other agencies do pretty well when it comes to taking care of the old and the weak evacuated from natural disasters. But things fall apart getting frail patients to where the care is. Still vivid are New Orleans memories of 34 nursing home residents abandoned to drown in the wake of Hurricane Katrina, and doctors struggling to evacuate patients from Charity Hospital, literally fighting to get them on choppers. Lou Maligano, CBS News.
Federal investigators plan to hold a public hearing into the bus fire near Dallas during the evacuation ahead of Hurricane Rita. 23 elderly people died. That fire was fueled by their oxygen tanks. That meeting will address transporting people with special needs during emergencies. I'm Cammie McCormick, CBS News.
The following is an OnStar conversation.
OnStar emergency, this is Danielle.
We need an ambulance. We're both hurt. I can't feel my leg.
Every month, OnStar offers help in thousands of emergencies.
Okay, I have a contact emergency service at this time.
Dispatch.
Yes, this is Donald with OnStar. I have a vehicle crash with injuries. Can I have a conversation with the vehicle?
Hello, how are you injured? What happened?
I can't feel my leg. Oh, please help me.
We'll get police and paramedics on the way.
Emergency services have been contacted, and I will remain on the line until they arrive.
He's all right in front of me.
The peace of mind OnStar offers is more affordable than you might think.
Emergency services, I haven't seen an accident.
They're here.
The first year of OnStar service is included on new OnStar-equipped GM vehicles, and unlimited use of all safety and security services costs only $16.95 plus tax per month after that. OnStar by GM. To experience OnStar, press your blue button or visit OnStar.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is a sizzling Friday afternoon on the left coast. I hope you're cool wherever you happen to be. Find some shade somewhere. We're about to launch another edition of the Peter B. Collins Show, and that makes me your humble host, Peter B. This show is live, unscripted, and unrehearsed. We've got some great guests lined up to talk with us today, and your calls and comments are welcome at any time along the way. Coming up during this hour, while everybody else is focused on the Middle East, we're going to take a little break. We'll do that next hour, Middle East. But we want to talk about the situation in Russia today. They hosted the G8 summit, left the microphone on so we could hear the way Bush's mind really works. We're going to talk to two experts on Russia in this hour. Dean Jonathan Becker will join us first, and then Scott Parrish from the Monterey Institute will be joining us in about half an hour. Next hour, our daily update on the situation in the Middle East. We get the breaking news coverage from Chris Tonsing of the Middle East Report. We're also going to hear from California Congressman Brad Sherman. He's the Democrat from Sherman Oaks, and it was Sherman Oaks before he was in Congress, just so you don't think they named it after him. And we're going to talk with him about the Republicans' dog and pony show on immigration policy that's been crisscrossing the country, and also get his views on the current situation in the Middle East. Then we're going to turn and talk about the problems in California's Department of Corrections. Matt Gray will join us from Capital Alliance. He's an advocate for improvements in the prisons and justice for California prisoners. Also today, we're going to talk with Mark Ash. He's the editor of truthout.org. They were visited by hackers earlier this week. We'll talk about that and also about his support for Jason Leopold in the controversial coverage of the Karl Rove investigation. State Senator Deborah Bowen on the program today to talk about election integrity. And Brad Friedman is actually taking a day off the first time in the last couple of years, I think. And so John Gideon, who blogs with Brad at BradBlog, will be joining us to update us on election integrity issues. That's all ahead, and your calls and comments are welcome. You know the numbers, 831-899-5792 on the Central Coast, or toll-free, 888-579-2540. And now that you know the numbers, we're going to change them on Monday, but we'll tell you about that when you need to know. Jonathan Becker joins us now, the Dean of International Studies at Bard University, and he is an expert on issues related to Russia. He is the director of Bard's Globalization and International Affairs Program, and he's an associate professor of political studies there as well. He wrote a book a few years ago called Soviet and Russian Press Coverage of the United States. Dean Becker, welcome to our program today.
Thank you very much.
Nice to talk with you, sir. And as I mentioned, the focus of the world is on the Middle East, and I'm going to circle around to that because Russia has a role and potentially a prominent role in some of the issues related to Iran and the conflicts there. But I wanted to start off just with your perspective on the G8 summit. Russia did not get what it really wanted, which was an invitation to join the WTO, the World Trade Organization. And there are many of us here in the United States who really aren't that excited about the WTO from the American perspective. But from Russia's view, what would be the benefits of joining the WTO, and why have barriers prevented them from doing so so far?
Well, I think Russia, just to turn that a little bit, I think Russia got most of what it wanted in the summit, which was to again be treated like a world power that it believes that it is. To have the leaders of other industrialized countries go there on Mr. Putin's home turf in St. Petersburg and declare essentially openly that Russia is a world power. As far as the WTO is concerned, you can say, yes, they didn't get that. They didn't join the WTO, which is, I don't think, a critical issue to them. More importantly, they didn't get it because President Putin stood up to the United States and would not cave on certain issues related to food imports. Which would have, in his mind, compromised Russia's position as a world leader. So I think for Russia, the G8 was a big success. The leaders came there, they came to St. Petersburg, and Russia was treated as a world power.
Mm-hmm. And we, of course, have been treated now to repeated plays of what CNN cleverly called the SH-blank-T, heard round the world.
Right.
And I'm not so concerned about the expletive that Bush got caught using. But I thought that that sequence, about a minute and a half, was revealing about the way he interacts with other world leaders. There he was chewing on a piece of bread and talking with his mouth full as Tony Blair was trying to talk to him about the situation in the Middle East. And he kind of was dismissive of him. He called him Blair in a rude and kind of petulant way. And then he teased him about the birthday sweater that he got. I'll bet you bought it for me yourself. And you know, I got a sense that this is a guy whose mind is racing, kind of attention deficit disorder, and that people like Blair, I guess, alternate between trying to work with him and being surprised at what comes out of his mouth.
Yeah, I mean, prior to the summit, I wrote a paper about Bush and Putin called Bush and Putin, the Ties That Bind, in which I tried to draw a lot of parallels between the two leaders and their types of actions. I think that, you know, Putin likes to talk tough and Bush likes to talk tough, although the joke in Russia was that Putin actually turned on the mic so that everyone could hear Bush in action.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that the U.S. president always acquits himself. I think more humorous for people who are interested in this was that when Bush spoke of Russia modeling its democracy on that in Iraq, Putin asserted quite aggressively that, of course, he said, we certainly would not want to have the same kind of democracy as they have in Iraq, I can tell you quite honestly.
Yeah.
And I thought that was even more an embarrassing moment than Bush's use of the SH word.
Well, and that was hot on the heels of Putin's comment about Dick Cheney's hunting trip, which Bush at least publicly said he thought was kind of funny.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, they are, I mean, the two leaders are chummy in certain ways. And what I argued in that is that they share certain authoritarian tendencies and therefore understand each other on a certain level. And there's a certain degree of cooperation, although one always wonders the extent to which Putin is taking more advantage of the relationship. We all recall the famous line when Bush looked into Putin's soul and saw someone whom he trusted.
Yeah.
So there is that going on as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, President Bush, it was not his most shining moment. I think Putin has particular hostility to Cheney because Cheney, as you may recall, not long before the summit went to Lithuania and then Kazakhstan and was quite aggressive in attacking Mr. Putin's leadership style and the state of democracy in Russia.
Interesting choice of venue for Cheney to talk about democracy in Kazakhstan?
Yes, exactly. there's a certain bit of irony, and even more ironic, although most people don't point to it, was that around the same time the president of Azerbaijan, who was the son of the former president of Azerbaijan, was visiting Mr. Bush in Washington, and for us to talk about Russian democracy at a time when we're celebrating Kazakh or Azeri democracy is a bit far-fetched. And that's what creates the difficulties for Mr. Bush, or President Bush in there, because the nature of us being hypocritical comes out too much. And mm-hmm. the Russians, who have severe problems with democracy, don't get me wrong, our message falls on deaf ears. Our criticisms fall on deaf ears when we're greeting the president of Azerbaijan and the president of Kazakhstan.
We're talking with Dean Jonathan Becker of the International Studies Department at Bard University. And Todd joins us from Marina. Good afternoon, Todd. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Just fine. What's your comment or question?
I hate to change the subject on you here, but you know, I'm a strong supporter of the Constitution, uh-huh. and I consider you almost an expert on the subject.
Well, that's a stretch.
Well,
I'm not sure. Todd, tell me what it's about, because I'm not sure I want to change the subject here. I thought you were calling about the topic we're discussing.
Okay, you know what? I could call back and let a person. I would talk about a bill passed by the House. Limiting the rights of federal judges to hear cases on flag burning?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we discussed that the last couple of days. I'll be happy to talk with you about it. Not a lot of room in today's show, but Monday in the Free Speech Zone. Why don't you call me at 5? We'll talk about it then.
That would be great. Sorry.
All right, Todd. It's a date. Thanks a lot. Dean Becker, returning to the situation in Russia, how serious are the issues related to religious freedom? Was that simply a bone that Dick Cheney wanted to pick at, or is there a serious crisis for religious expression in today's Russia?
I would not say that there's a crisis in terms of religious expression in Russia, particularly compared to the communist period. But there's a broad underlying danger of nationalism, sometimes extreme xenophobia in Russia, which comes out not only in religious areas. They've taken actions to limit proselytizing, particularly by Western entities which come in there and challenge the Orthodox majority. But the nationalism and xenophobia which results in skinhead attacks on minorities and others, that is a very, very serious issue that goes on there. I visit Russia 3 or 4 times a year, and I think it was 2 years ago the lead speaker at a human rights conference that I was meant to attend was killed by skinheads the day before the conference. So there are serious issues, less so, I think, by emerging from the government as there are emerging from within society.
Mm-hmm. Dean, we're going to take a quick break and return. I want to talk with you about Russia's role in the dust-up with Tehran, the Iranians, and also ask you if you think they have a role to play in trying to end the battles between Israel and Hezbollah and Hamas. We'll talk about that in the next segment, and you can join us if you'd like to talk about Russia. That's our topic this hour, 831-899-5792 on the Central Coast, or toll-free at 888-579-2540. 17 minutes past the hour. This is the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, I'm Dan Brown, president of At Your Service Premier Event Planning and Transportation. We specialize in events ranging from a 2-person anniversary or 200 guests attending the great AT&T or the concourse. We have a fleet of sedans, limousines, vans, mini coaches, as well as vintage cars that make any event special. Weddings, wine tours, or corporate events, give us a call, 625-5363, or check us out on the web, MontereyLimos.com.
For whatever legal advice you need, go to Lawyers on Duty. Whether it's for your estate planning, divorce, custody, probate, or a living trust, Lawyers on Duty has experienced attorneys with realistic fees. There's no need to go anywhere else. At Lawyers on Duty, they're available, knowledgeable, and affordable. Located in the courtyard behind Rosine's on Alvarado Street, Monterey. Lawyers on Duty open every weekday 9 to 5. Call Lawyers on Duty, 375-5100, 375-5100. Alan Kaplan, owner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop. And the Peter B. Collins Show continues. On the air in Monterey, Santa Cruz, Eureka, Arcata, Sacramento, and Phoenix, wherever you are, I'm glad you're listening. We continue now with Dean Jonathan Becker. He's at Bard University, the author of a book in 2003 called Soviet and Russian Press Coverage of the United States. We're talking about, in the wake of the G8 summit in St. Petersburg, the role of Russia in the world. And Dr. Becker, before I ask you about the Middle East, I'm just curious if they have resolved the issues related to the gas pipeline that comes through the Ukraine that was the source of great controversy last year. I understand that Ukraine was siphoning off a lot of the gas that was intended simply to be passing through that nation, and it produced quite a dust-up. Is it going to be another problem this coming winter?
It may well be, although Russia this was very bad for President Putin. The idea that he was using gas as a weapon against Ukraine played very poorly throughout Europe, because approximately a third of European households get natural gas from Russia one way or another. And the idea that they would cut off a country in the middle of winter led to a lot of fear on the part of Europeans and undermined Russia's image as a reliable energy partner, which it had going back to Soviet times. So I don't think that's likely to happen at this point, but there's a lot of hard bargaining on Russia's side, because they're essentially what they want to do is they want to trade gas to get assets in the form of the pipelines, or to build alternative pipelines so that they don't have to go through Ukraine. So we'll see how that plays out. The story isn't over, and Russian-Ukrainian tensions are not over yet, but I don't think that gas will be used as a weapon like it was last year.
Is the Yushchenko government stable?
Well, is it stable? I mean, the irony in Ukraine is that Mr. Yanukovych, who was his opponent and the one who was originally declared winner of the election in Ukraine, has now just been named as prime minister. What it represents is a little bit confusing, what exactly Mr. Yushchenko represents at this point in time. A lot of people aren't quite certain. People had assumed that Yulia Tymoshenko, who is more liberal, Western-oriented, was going to be the prime minister, but they couldn't agree
That's the
power.
Female with the background running Gazprom, right?
Not Gazprom, she has experience within Ukraine energy concern.
Okay, that's what it was, yeah. Next, I wanted to just ask you about Russia's role in our current problems in the Middle East.
Right.
And let's just take this aspect for a moment. Iran is clearly at odds with Washington, and many people are concerned that we may end up in some sort of a military conflict, call it a war, call it a conflict, or preemptive strikes on Iran. If that's the case, whose side will Russia take?
Well, that's a very good question. I think, Russia at this point is concerned, I believe, about the possibility of Iran obtaining nuclear weapons. As you and all the listeners will know, Russia has had a significant problem with Chechnya, which is a predominantly Muslim republic to its south, and it does fear Muslim aggression, as it were, or militant Islam. And I think there would be concern about Iran possessing a nuclear weapon. At the same time, Russia is a big business partner with Iran. It is helping to build a nuclear reactor, about how much concern there is. And Russia, its role it's trying to play is to pressure Iran, but to avoid things like United Nations sanctions against Iran.
Mm-hmm.
So Russia will play a major role. If the U.S. goes to war in Iran, I think Russia would... it's hard to say. I think the United States would try, Russia would try to dissuade the United States from doing that, and its exact role would be difficult to predict.
Mm-hmm. And aside from the nuclear business relationship, and there was the offer from Russia to actually refine the uranium
right.
for at a level that would be sufficient for electricity generation, but not the creation of nuclear weapons. But what other business interests? Is there a significant oil exchange, or are there other economic relationships that are very important to Russia and Iran?
Well, there's substantial economic investment by the part of Russia and Iran. There's a partnership going back before, back to the Soviet times, after the fall of the Shah, and there's a whole array of activities. They're both, the real story about Russia, just to take a step back, because this is very important, is that Russia has now become a world power. Russia was on its knees in 1998. It had economic collapse after the fall of the Soviet Union. And since 1998, based on the growing price of oil and gas, Russia's economy has grown. It's been incredibly strengthened, and now Russia wants to flex its muscles around the world. It's no longer a supplicant. It is a player. And it will be a player in Iran. It will be a player elsewhere throughout the world. Today it was just announced that Russia is going to sell $1 billion worth of military equipment to Venezuela. So Russia, Venezuela, and Iran all share benefits of increased world crude oil prices. And Russia, most of all, wants to be respected on the world stage and not be treated like a junior partner. So Russia will be flexing its muscles everywhere.
Just about a minute remaining, Dean Becker. What's life like for an average Russian today? Is it better than under the Yeltsin years? That was about the most chaotic period from my perspective.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, at the end of the Yeltsin years, 50% of Russians said life like this can't go on anymore, and more than 70% said Russia is heading in the wrong direction. Now Putin has a popularity of over 70%. There are still great economic disparities within the population, but there are some very, very rich people, and there's starting to be a growing middle class. So you have an odd dynamic. On the one hand, it is true that people's freedoms have been limited under Putin. On the other hand, especially since 1998, just before Putin came into power, you've had regular and substantial economic growth. And right now, the population overall seems to be willing to sacrifice a certain amount of freedoms in order to enjoy the prospects of economic growth and the values. There's still a tremendous, as I said, disparity of wealth within the country and poverty. and so forth, especially outside of the main cities. But overall, Mr. Putin remains popular because Russia is viewed as stronger and the economy is viewed as growing.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us today, and there's certainly much more to talk about Russia. And next, Scott Parrish is going to join us. We're going to talk about some of the military issues, the loose nukes, and the agreement that Putin and Bush made about that last week. Thank you very much, Dean Becker, for joining us today.
Many thanks.
I'm Peter B. Collins. Stay tuned for more right here.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Parents, do you need cash for college? This year, more than $100 billion is available for financial aid. Let AboutCollegeFunding.com help you navigate the complicated process to accessing your share of these funds. AboutCollegeFunding.com is now offering free one-hour consultations for parents in need of answers. To schedule your free one-hour consultation with RJ Moyet, call 1-888-337-9775. That's 1-888-337-9775.
Remember, the early bird gets the cash.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
Hello, this is Al Moore with Moore Imported Cars in Monterey, where we feature quality pre-owned motor cars. It has been said that the world's best automobiles are manufactured within sight of the Alps. They include Mercedes-Benz, BMWs, and Porsches. These are the marks of dreams, and they're the manufacturers we specialize in. Some of our European autos start as low as $21,000 and experience very little depreciation. In fact, many of our Porsches actually increase in value, and our Porsches and other German autos have surprisingly good gas mileage too. Many of our autos are covered under manufacturer's warranty or are available with short or long-term service agreements. We also can arrange financing, and we do accept trades.
Drop by Moore Imported Cars, 999 Del Monte Avenue in Monterey, or browse to moreimports.com. That's M-O-H-R imports.com. Call Al Moore at 831-373-3131.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from Thinker Toys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from Thinker Toys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, or the just renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues. I'm glad you're listening on this sizzling Friday afternoon. We continue our look at Russia following its hosting of the G8 summit in St. Petersburg last week. We're joined now by Dr. Scott Parrish, the editor of the Nonproliferation Review, the CNS Journal, and a senior research associate at the NIS Nonproliferation Program. And he's based right in Monterey, the home of our flagship station, KRXA 540. Dr. Parrish, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, thanks for having me. I appreciate the chance to be on.
Oh, well, it's our pleasure to talk with you because you know more than I do.
Well, I wouldn't want to exaggerate that too much.
Well, allow me. First up, I just wanted to get your reaction to the G8 summit. Dean Jonathan Becker from Bard was on just a few minutes ago, and he was saying that one of the things that occurred there is it at least cemented for people the resurgence of Russia as a world power, and that Putin got to play host to the other big heads of state, and it certainly burnished his image domestically. What are your thoughts on the ascendancy of Russia in the past few years?
Yeah, I think that's generally true. I mean, I think Russia has sort of come roaring back in some ways since the nadir of the economic collapse and the currency collapse back in 1998-1999. I'm not sure how much credit I might give for that to Mr. Putin. Of course, rising oil prices over most of that period have a lot to do with it, and especially right now with oil, getting close to $80 a barrel? I didn't look at the price today yet. That's a lot of extra money in Russian coffers that gives them a lot of opportunity to do things that they couldn't have done before.
Uh-huh.
So it's certainly the case, I think, that Russia is no longer quite the cash-strapped country that we used to think of in the late 1990s. In fact, I was there this spring, and, you know, the debate in the Russian media now is sort of, what are we going to do with all this extra, you know, money we're raking in from these huge oil windfall profits, basically.
Mm-hmm. Now, give us your assessment of the the Russian military capability today, because during the Yeltsin years, many of the members of the military, including particularly the Navy, were not getting paid. And it caused a great deal of concern in other parts of the world that some of these unpaid military soldiers and officials would be trying to sell nuclear materiel or actual nuclear weapons in order to generate cash. And, of course, this would create a major risk to us in other parts of the world.
Right. I mean, I think that problem still exists. Because Russia is still the largest holder of nuclear materials in the world. They inherited an enormous legacy from the Soviet nuclear weapons program. Hundreds, if not, in fact, more than 1,000 tons of, you know, highly enriched uranium and plutonium, which could be used to make nuclear weapons, and, of course, thousands of nuclear weapons themselves. So that problem, I think, is still out there. Now, again, things are much better than they were in the 1990s, when people really weren't getting paid, you know, their salaries for months. Economic conditions were dire, and you really might worry that someone could face a choice between, you know, feeding their family and selling something. And, of course, we have seen plenty of cases of people trying to sell, you know, all kinds of weapons and equipment, including up to, you know, nuclear materials, although not, you know, an actual nuclear weapon. But a lot of that has tapered off, as I said, since the late 1990s. The Russian government now has, you know, fuller coffers and is able to pay people at least somewhat more reasonable salaries and more or less on time. But having said that, you know, threats have increased too. Russia's fighting a war against terrorists in Chechnya, you know, inside its own country. Those are well-organized, very dedicated terrorists who have mounted, you know, serious assaults. 40 terrorists seized, you know, a theater in Moscow a couple years ago. You might remember that incident.
Sure do. Yeah. The school in Beslan.
30-some-odd terrorists were involved in that attack, which was also quite well organized. So if you think about, you know, 30 or 40 terrorists deciding to attack, you know, a nuclear facility, maybe, say, a civilian facility, you know, not a military facility, but one that has nuclear materials for peaceful or research purposes, they decide to attack it. I think many Russian facilities, although their security is better than it was in the 90s, might not be prepared to fight off that kind of assault. And even with all the money in Russia, you know, corruption is still quite a big problem in Russia. So
yeah,
one could still worry about, you know, an insider threat, that is, you know, someone inside deciding, not that they need to sell something, you know, to survive, but, you know, I'd like to make a lot of money, and there's this valuable material at this place I work, and I'm kind of disgruntled for one reason or another, and so I decide to try and sell it for a big payoff, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people with that kind of mentality exist in all you know, in all countries. I think if that hasn't happened so far in Russia, it's because, you know, a lot of Russian nuclear scientists that I've met are very patriotic, very, you know, good people. But you can't count on that, you know, 100% of the time. So I think both those threats are still out there, both the threat of a serious terrorist attack on a Russian facility and some sort of insider threat. Those are real threats that that we need to worry about. And I think we should work harder to deal with them, basically.
We're talking with Dr. Scott Parrish here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Dr. Parrish, there was a bilateral agreement announced at the G8 summit between the U.S. and Russia regarding attempts to secure these nuclear weapons and nuclear materials that you and I just referred to. Is it significant? Is it enforceable?
I think it's a significant agreement. I mean, it's always significant when, you know, the two top leaders of the U.S. and Russia get together and say, this is a priority item for us, and we want to move forward together on it. You know, when that happens, lower-level officials in the government who maybe were dragging their heels for one reason or another have to pick up their ears a little bit and work a little bit harder. So that's always good. A problem that we've had in this area for a long time, though, is that, you know, you can go back to Clinton and you can find statements saying, you know, nuclear proliferation, nuclear terrorism, you know, these are the number one threats to national security. Yet the sort of follow-through to match that rhetoric has never really been there consistently. You know, I would give Mr. Bush and Mr. Putin some credit. Over the last couple of years, they've been paying more attention, but I think they need to focus even more on this. I mean, if this is really the number one threat to our national security, it really should be probably the top item on the president's agenda with almost every country in the world. Russia's not the only country in the world with enough nuclear materials that terrorists could steal to make a nuclear weapon and use against us. There's over 40 countries that have highly enriched uranium and plutonium for various purposes. Most of them have it for, you know, for peaceful purposes. They don't have weapons. But that material could be stolen by somebody else and used for weapons. And in many of those countries, they're not as concerned about terrorism as we are. So there really needs to be a global effort to deal with this threat. Now, the two presidents issued a statement, right, at this G8 summit saying that, you know, we're going to launch this global initiative to combat nuclear terrorism. And I commend that. There's a lot of great rhetoric in that statement. I think we need to, you know, we need to wait and see what sort of concrete programs and concrete implementation comes out of that. And is it, you know, is there follow through behind it, or, you know, does it kind of get forgotten a little bit? You know, 6 months from now, we'll be able to point to any sort of concrete, you know, accomplishments.
Well, we have been offering $25 million bounties for the capture of Osama bin Laden and some other key figures. Is there any bounty offered for people who want to cough up one of these rogue or uncontrolled nuclear weapons?
Well, that's an interesting question. Of course,
I mean, why don't we just put it up on eBay with you know, a guaranteed
right.
minimum bid of $1 million?
We don't know that any actual nuclear weapons have been stolen, right? I mean, we know that there have been a few cases of theft of, you know, highly enriched uranium or plutonium that can be traced back, in most cases, to the former Soviet Union, although in a couple cases to other countries. So we could certainly, you know, put out a reward for, you know, that kind of material. If anybody wanted to bring it in. I mean, most of the cases we know about because people were caught trying to sell these materials, and usually, at least so far, it seems like the buyers they found were usually, you know, undercover agents.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, there may be other cases that we don't know about, right? If you think about smuggling in general, or if you think about drug smuggling, for example, right, we intercept only a tiny percentage of illegal drugs that are trafficked around the world. So you might infer from that if you know some nuclear smuggling is going on, there's probably more going on that you haven't caught. But it's very hard to say how much more.
And nobody stood up and said,
hey, I did it. I got some.
Right. I'm just skeptical, too, that U.S. authorities and Russian authorities have the ability to work together to deal with these kinds of issues.
Well, actually, I think, you know, mentalities have changed quite a lot since the end of the Cold War, and I think there are many, you know, many people in both countries who recognize very clearly that this is a global problem. It's one that, you know, neither of our countries can solve alone, that we can only solve working together, and I might add, together with many other countries as well, a step that I think needs to be, you know, emphasized and built on much more strongly. But I do think there is, of course, there are still disagreements. You know, different countries have different priorities. They're not always going to agree on everything. And, of course, in this, you know, nuclear business, there's still a lot of secrets and, you know, maybe not 100% level of trust. But you'd be amazed at how much cooperation there is between Russian and American officials who have been working together on this issue for over a decade now, I might add, and have really made significant, you know, significant progress. I mean, back in the 90s, there were Russian facilities, you know, with, you know, that people walked into, threw holes in the fences, you know, took one bolt cutter, cut one padlock off one shed, and walked off with highly enriched uranium. You know, that happened in the early 90s in Russia. I don't think that could happen anymore. Enough improvements have been made that that kind of scenario is pretty unlikely. The problem is that's not, you know, that's not the top-level threat we face, as I mentioned earlier. You know, the top-level threat we face is much more serious than that, right? 20 hijackers on 9/11, 30 or 40 in some of these cases in Russia. You know, we're facing a much more determined, organized adversary. If they really turn their mind to doing this, that's going to be a very different threat. I would say there's a lot of, a lot of people in both countries who want to work hard on this, a lot of serious professionals who are working hard on it, but they could use more top-level political support to, you know, break out of bureaucratic log jams that inevitably, you know, occur. There are always bureaucratic interests that are kind of getting in the way. So I think we could certainly use more sustained high-level attention to this. Like I said, if it's really priority number one, the president, you know, the president should wake up every morning almost, I would say, and say, okay, what have we done? You know, what have we done today to address the threat of nuclear terrorism? You know, because if one nuclear terrorist attack succeeds anywhere in the world, the consequences are going to be quite serious, I think. You know, imagine what happens. We wake up tomorrow and there was a nuclear detonation in, I don't know, London or Tokyo or New York or Moscow. The implications of that, I think, will be enormous. And we will wish, we'll wake up the day after and ask, you know, did we do everything we could? And right now, I think the answer probably would still be no.
Yeah. Dr. Scott Parrish with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Let's jump to a phone call. It's Marianne in Pacific Grove. Hello, Marianne. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. When this started, I was in a light mood. Now I'm depressed.
Okay.
two things. I wanted to put it out to anybody who's a Russian speaker, because I can't find my Russian English dictionary. What is the word for horseradish? And your guest might know if he's fluent in Russian.
Horseradish in Paruski?
Horseradish.
That's Paruski for 50 on the big board.
Yeah.
He knows the slang?
Yeah, no, hold on a second. And I'm going through garlic, mustard.
It's a very derogatory term.
Oh.
Yes.
I thought you were, you know, looking for the equivalent to wasabi.
No, no, no. Horseradish, and I will put it as politely as possible, is an incredibly derogatory term for the male part.
I see.
And you say that to somebody who is a total and absolute jerk. And I'm hoping that they had the microphones on.
Well, let's see. Scott, you coming up with anything?
Not off the top of my head, unfortunately.
Well, we have
it as soon as she hangs up.
Well, we have a three-minute break. So why don't you ponder that? Maybe you can even Google it in Russian and see what you come up with.
Yeah.
Marianne, did you have another one?
Yeah, I do. If I was in Russia in 99 when things were just about as bad as they could be, and yeah, they're coming up out of the sewer, and I'm very glad of that. But what I saw in the arts just terrified me. The Hermitage, you know, rah-rah,
yeah.
It's got thousands and thousands of glass cases with little silver cream pitchers in them, and they're walking off to the tune of 500 a day, or were. But what absolutely made me sick was what was happening to the art. The Rembrandts are facing a window that faces the River Neva, and the only air conditioning in that place was to open the windows. And the Rembrandts were not sealed. They were behind glass, but lousy, you know, lousy work. And
well, we're going to have to get you a gig as a guest curator at the Hermitage.
Boy, I'd love it.
You can help straighten that out. Listen, I need to run to a break. Thanks for your call today, Marianne. And we'll continue with Scott Parrish, who may or may not figure out the Russian word for horseradish, which we now know is an insult, if properly applied. We'll continue in just a moment. Look what you learn when you listen to the Peter B. Collins Show.
All right.
I'm Chuck Mackley, owner of Executive Financial Services. I can get you up to 12% interest on your investment on first and second trust deeds secured by real property. Don't settle for 3 to 5% on your money. Call me today at 443-7277. Your investment will be protected by the equity in the property and title insurance. Put your hard-earned money to work. Call Executive Financial Services at 443-7277 and ask for Chuck Mackley.
Tired of stale syndicated right-wing blowhards?
And we are thrilled and honored to have with us Donald Rumsfeld.
You got a bunch of dopey kids watching these shows. Oh, O'Reilly! Oh.
Here on KRXA 540, you can hear a fresh local liberal blowhard.
And another thing, Coach, you could strip me naked, stake me to an anthill, pour honey all over me, and I still wouldn't vote for a Republican.
Hal on the show every morning from 9 to 10, only on KRXA 540. Down in Monterey.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside. So it means that our investigation turned up nothing.
If somebody testifies by him before a grand jury, doesn't mean he's involved.
And it's flat out absurd. Bush was begging that governor on the Sunday before the hurricane hit to get people out of there and to declare an emergency.
It's all crazy propaganda. The Joseph Goebbels Network.
Bush was on the phone with her. They were thinking about sending the military in because the state and local people weren't acting fast enough.
It is certain that some self-possessed judge somewhere will soon rule that three men or three women can live. Yet Iraqis are united in a broad and deep conviction. 12 government ministries are currently under the direct control of Iraqis. I don't think that's too high a standard.
If you've retired, you don't have anything to worry about. Probably say it three more times. See, in my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in. You got to catapult the propaganda.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, coming up just about 15 minutes away. Our daily update on the Middle East conflict with Chris Tonsing from the Middle East Report. And he'll be followed by Congressman Brad Sherman of Sherman Oaks, a Democrat. We're going to talk about the Republican immigration policies and the various so-called hearings they've staged around the country. And we'll get Congressman Sherman's thoughts about the Middle East as well. We continue with Scott Parrish, editor of the Nonproliferation Review, and he's right along the central coast of California at the Monterey Institute. And Scott Parrish, did you find that Russian word for horseradish?
I did, yeah. I believe she's referring to hren.
Okay, and you want to use that in a sentence, or will it cost me $350,000?
Yeah, it'll cost you $350,000.
All right.
I think she's right that used in the right context, it's an insult. So.
Okay. Well, we'll tell Jon Stewart, and on the Russian version of The Daily Show, he can use it and then bleep it. Dr. Parrish, I've got what is potentially a curveball here, but maybe it'll lead in a productive direction. And I've been wanting to ask somebody who knows the world of nonproliferation about this. Valerie Plame Wilson was outed, many people think, in retaliation for her husband's outspokenness on the causes of the Iraq War. And she was working for a CIA cover company called Brewster Jennings. That was her assignment. And, of course, we don't know much, but what we do know is that she was a specialist on nonproliferation and that Iran was one of the key target countries that she was focused on. Can you tell us, and maybe you can't, did the outing of Valerie Plame compromise Brewster Jennings, and did it undermine our efforts to monitor Iran's activities and intentions?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I haven't specifically researched that, but I imagine that, you know, her outing, as you put it, must have had some negative, some negative consequences. If nothing else, you know, she probably had lots of contacts with a lot of people over the course of her years, working more or less undercover. And once she was revealed, I think, you know, other countries' services and other, you know, maybe other networks, you know, not run by states, but, you know, proliferation networks might have had to go back, might have gone back and said, okay, did we ever have any contact with anybody she had contact with? So I would imagine that a lot of people were potentially put at risk as a result of that. Yeah, and that some of the companies, you know, that she worked for that were maybe, you know, helping out our intelligence community were also put at some degree of risk.
Mm-hmm.
So I would certainly say that probably was the case. As I recall, I mean, nobody really knows, you know, how undercover was she at that time? But even if she wasn't undercover right at that moment when her name was first published, she clearly was in the past. So I think there was still some, you know, definitely some negative consequences from that.
And with that aside, what do you see as our capabilities in really understanding what's going on in Iran? Seymour Hersh's coverage in The New Yorker indicates that even the generals at the Pentagon think that we have woefully inadequate intelligence about what is truly going on in Iran.
Yeah, I think that's probably the case, that we know a lot less about Iran than we'd like to and probably less than we should. I mean, as you know, we've had no diplomatic relations, for example, with Iran for many years, which means we have no embassy there, no staff who can really sort of, you know, get into the culture and get some information out. I think that makes it much harder for us to run intelligence operations there as well. So I think we do definitely have a real deficit, in particular of, you know, human intelligence on the ground in Iran. I think just about everybody seems to agree about that. And there are limits to what you can find out, you know, with signals intelligence and with satellite intelligence and so on.
Right.
Do you
have any sense that Russia is helping us with intelligence, or is Russia in a standoff mode because of their conflict of interest, the business interests that they have with Iran?
That's a really good question, and I think there's some debate inside Russia about that, probably. I think there's some disagreement in Russia about, you know, the extent of the threat that Iran might present. I think the Russians are sincere when they say they don't want Iran to have a nuclear weapon, but they have, I think, a very different sort of risk assessment calculus than we do. Whether they're helping us with any intelligence information out of, you know, Iran is... it's a good question. They may be giving us some. They've argued for many years that, you know, it was actually maybe a good idea to do some limited civilian nuclear cooperation with Iran, because that would give you sort of a window, so to speak, into their nuclear program.
Mm-hmm.
You would pick up hints and signals of what they were doing, and you might get, you know, some early warning of, you know, more military-oriented activities if you did that. Whether, you know, the Russians have been able to substantiate that now by helping us out very much, I don't know. I haven't seen a lot of sign of that. But
mm-hmm.
it's possible that they have a little bit. And I think also, though, that the Russians have become more skeptical of the Iranians in the last, you know, in the last few years. Finally, just I think this past week, you know, the Russians said, well, maybe we'll need to think about sanctions at some point in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still a big difference there, I think, between U.S. and Russian.
I want to come back to a Russian domestic issue that you touched on a little earlier, the conflict they have with the Islamic radical Chechens, the group led by the late Shamil Basayev. And the KGB succeeded in killing him, or at least confirming that he's dead. It's a little bit mysterious so far. And I'm just curious if Basayev's death is kind of the equivalent of Zarqawi, where it is a media moment seized upon by the government that sees benefit from that, but it really doesn't make a damn bit of difference in the level of violence or the threat posed by the survivors.
Yeah, I think that may, in the end, turn out to be the case. As you know, the Russians are now fighting their second war in Chechnya. The first one ran from, you know, 95 to about 97, and now this last one's been going since about 1999. There's been a continuing pretty high level of violence. The Russians have, you know, killed a succession of different Chechen leaders. The first president of the self-declared independent Chechnya, Dzhokhar Dudayev, you know, was blown up by a Russian missile that homed in on his satellite telephone, apparently. More recently they killed his successor, Aslan Maskhadov. Now they finally got Basayev, who had been reported killed many times in the past, by the way, and then sort of popped up again.
Like the number three guy in Al-Qaeda.
you know, you've got...
Sorry.
Other people are going to be there, are going to stand up to take his place probably. You know, the way the Russians have handled that conflict, sort of the level of brutality that they've used, I'm sure you've seen pictures of the Chechen capital. You know, it looks like a city that was, you know, bombed down to the foundations in World War II. That population is pretty thoroughly radicalized as a result of that. I mean, remember, you've got women suicide bombers who have gone from Chechnya up into Russia, even into Moscow, to detonate bombs. You know, when you've got the women in the society reduced to the point of desperation that they're willing to become suicide bombers, that's not going to go away when you just kill one leader.
Right. Got to stop there. Dr. Scott Parrish, thank you for joining us, editor of the Nonproliferation Review and at the Monterey Institute. Coming up next, Chris Tonsing with the update on breaking news from the Middle East and Congressman Brad Sherman in the next half hour, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
I am Attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school, when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am Attorney Sean Mills.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
A U.S. mission to the Mideast.
I will travel to Israel and the Palestinian territories.
In the Midwest, the weather goes from bad to worse.
We currently have about 570,000 customers in Missouri and Illinois without service.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. She's not looking for a quick fix, but Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice announced today that she'll leave for the Middle East on Sunday. CBS News reporter Charles Wilson has the itinerary.
After meeting with Israeli leaders, Rice intends to go to Rome, where she'll meet with officials from a small group of Arab and European countries dedicated to finding a lasting peace between Israel and Lebanon. That will, she said, involve creating an international military force to keep the peace.
It's got to be robust, and it's got to be capable of helping the Lebanese forces make certain that southern Lebanon is not a haven for these kinds of attacks.
A quick ceasefire, Rice said, would only be a false promise, which would lead to further attacks by Hezbollah. Charles Wolfson, CBS News, the State Department.
Rice has no plans to meet with the leaders of Hezbollah or Syria. In northern Israel, tanks and troops have been on the move, preparing for more cross-border ground action against Hezbollah.
Israelis and their government are fed up with rocket attacks from southern Lebanon. The city of Haifa, which until last week felt safe, was struck by 11 missiles today, wounding 20 civilians. To destroy or push away Hezbollah rocket launchers, a few hundred Israeli troops have been scouring Lebanese villages, and thousands more with tanks are visibly waiting to cross the border.
That doesn't mean we conquer Lebanon.
Cabinet Minister Yitzhak Herzog signaling this won't be a full invasion as in 1982. Most Israelis feel that one turned out to be disastrous. Dan Raviv, CBS News, Tel Aviv.
One top Israeli commander says the fighting could go on for a number of weeks. Now this.
Big meeting in the morning and you're ready. All you need is a good night's sleep, but you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning and the pain.
Ooh.
Is driving you insane.
I gotta get some sleep. I should use Preparation H.
Why keep tossing and turning because of the itching and burning? Use Preparation H cream with maximum strength pain relief. Relieves burning and itching and adds maximum strength pain relief on contact. Nighttime's the right time, too.
Ah.
For Preparation H cream, pain relief on contact. Use as directed.
Net Zero, America's number one value-priced internet service, is only $9.95 a month, and there's no commitment and no credit card required. Signing up for Net Zero is so simple, you'll be online in minutes. Plus, Net Zero gives you powerful virus protection, and your service is backed by a connection guarantee. join the millions of people who have switched to the internet service that ranks higher than AOL in customer satisfaction. Call 1-800-NET-ZERO or go to netzero.com.
The weather in the heartland is like a pendulum swinging from extreme heat to violent storms. The St. Louis area has been pounded hard as crews struggled to restore power knocked out by Wednesday storms. More strong wind and rain came through today. Tim Fox of Ameren Power says there is an upside.
The storm that blew through today, while it put another 200,000 people out of service, did bring in cooler temperatures. And that's very important for both our employees and our customers.
They've been living without air conditioning in triple-digit temperatures. St. Charles, Missouri is hard hit. And across the state line in Trenton, Illinois, John Mills of CBS television affiliate KMOV found more damage.
Trenton, Illinois was just pounded by this storm. Some are estimating wind gusts in excess of 80 miles an hour here. A lot of trees are down.
And power to many homes and businesses is out. Actor Jack Warden, known to generations of moviegoers and TV viewers, has died at 85. Warden had two Oscar nominations over a long career that included 12 Angry Men, Shampoo, and Heaven Can Wait. Here he is opposite Paul Newman in the 1982 film The Verdict.
Frankie, listen to me because I'm done with you. I got you a good case. It's a moneymaker.
He made such a lasting impact in every medium. Just a wonderful actor and a guy who presented himself as a kind of everyman. I think that's why everybody could relate to him.
Leonard Maltin of Entertainment Tonight. Jack Warden won an Emmy for his starring role in the TV series Crazy Like a Fox. Three Boston police officers are accused of taking $35,000 to protect a cocaine shipment. It was a federal sting. Prosecutors say the cops were busted in Miami, where they went to celebrate their big score and discuss further deals with the undercover agents they thought were drug traffickers. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
I found a great summer hotel deal.
Let me guess, your parents' house.
No, Priceline has the top 50 vacation spots, up to 50% off.
Places we actually want to go?
Soho, New York.
Yeah?
The Strip in Vegas.
Ooh.
Waikiki, Hawaii.
Up to 50% off?
When you name your own price. Check out all 50 spots on Priceline.
I'm guessing your parents' house didn't make the list.
The 50-50 hotel savings event, only on Priceline. More ways to save. Exact hotel shown only after purchase.
The point of commercials is, of course, to get you to do something. For example, we'd like you to go to Geico.com and get a free rate quote. But if you're still not reaching for your mouse, at least do this for me. Call a friend who has Geico and ask some questions. Can Geico really save me that much money? Is their claim service as good as, well, they claim? Are they really available 24/7? Once you get your answers, we'll be right here.
Go to Geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
It's time for another hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm glad you're listening. I'm Peter B., live from San Francisco. And whether you're listening in Monterey, Eureka, Sacramento, or Phoenix, I'm glad you're along with us. And a little bit later, we'll tell you how you can join our celebration of our first anniversary, maybe win a case of Central Coast wine. Coming up shortly, Congressman Brad Sherman, a Democrat from Southern California, will join us. Yes, he's the Sherman of Sherman Oaks. But it was Sherman Oaks, I think, long before Brad was even born. We're going to talk to him about the immigration dog and pony show that Republicans are putting on around the country these days. But first, it's time for our daily report on breaking news from the Middle East. And we are joined, as usual at this time, by Chris Tonsing from the Middle East Report. Good afternoon, Chris. We heard at the top of the hour newscast that Condoleezza Rice, our Secretary of State, has finally announced that she will make a peacekeeping mission to the region. I guess she's departing on Sunday.
That's the plan, and the question is still what exactly she's going to seek to accomplish over there. She repeated in her press conference to announce her trip to the region that a ceasefire would be a false promise if it simply returns to the status quo. And so she intends to work urgently to create the conditions for stability and lasting peace. Those are her words. It's unclear, though, how we can get there without having a ceasefire first, particularly since the fighting is continuing to escalate on the ground with a major large-scale Israeli ground incursion and it appears fairly sharp fighting on the ground between the Israeli army and Hezbollah fighters.
Mm-hmm. All right, go on. I'll circle back when you're finished with your report. I want to talk about the San Francisco Chronicle article today saying that Israel set this war plan in place more than a year ago. But let me hear the rest of your items, and then we'll talk about that.
Aside from the announcement of Rice's visit, most of the developments are not on the diplomatic front, but rather on the military front. There was yesterday, thousands of Israeli troops have gone into Lebanon. Israel has called up several battalions of reservists, indicating that the operation will go on for some time. The Israeli chief of staff has told the Israeli media that weeks would not be an unreasonable estimate of how long it may take Israel to achieve its military objectives, which still appear to be limited to perhaps pushing Hezbollah fighters and rocket launchers and so on north of the Litani River, at least for the time being, and then perhaps the Israeli army would, in the long run, turn over that territory to some kind of international stabilization force, which is being talked about at the UN Security Council. This appears to be a French-British proposal at this stage. And the question, again, would be what sort of mission the stabilization force would have. If its mission was to disarm Hezbollah forcibly, then the stabilization force could find itself in the same kind of long-term guerrilla war that Israel found itself in with Hezbollah during the preceding decades.
Mm-hmm. So what do you make of this San Francisco Chronicle story? It squares with some of the speculation that we've heard over the past 9-10 days that while there were imminent provocations, Israel had planned to take out these Hezbollah capabilities for at least a year, if not longer.
Well, I think, you know, as with the U.S., I mean, there are always contingency plans for various countries that are on the shelf, and that may be what this refers to. But certainly there has been concern in the Israeli military and political establishment for some time about these thousands of rockets and rocket launchers on their northern border. And let's be plain. I mean, these rockets and rocket launchers do pose a threat to Israel, and Hezbollah did, you know, is engaging in innately indiscriminate attacks on Israeli civilians with these rockets, and also did violate Israel's sovereignty with the initial cross-border raid. So this is a threat to Israel. It's not an existential threat. Israel is probably magnifying the extent of it in the global PR campaign that they're waging. But you know, certainly the Hezbollah's arms and the apparent, you know, stalemate in Lebanon as far as trying to disarm Hezbollah would have to have been a long-term concern for the Israeli military and government. And so it would not be surprising to me if they did have such a plan in place.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, it speaks to the ferocity of these attacks, because it's not simply to recover Corporal Gilad, I think his name is, and the two additional soldiers who were nabbed when the Hezbollah front was opened up now 10 days ago.
No, I think that the tactical objective of recovering the soldiers is not what's at play here with this offensive. I think probably Israel understands that that is going to happen through an exchange of prisoners, although down the road after hostilities have ceased. No, I think that Israel is exploiting a window of opportunity that they have been given by the international community, by which I mean primarily the United States,
mm-hmm.
To prosecute a war in Lebanon to try to eliminate this military threat that Hezbollah's rockets do pose, that I outlined just now. And the cross-border raid was what was the sort of precipitating condition that was needed. But it's the U.S. stance in all of this that really explains why this has developed into such a full-blown military confrontation.
Mm-hmm. Anything else that's breaking that we ought to know about, Chris?
I think we've covered the main bases.
All right, sir. Well, we'll talk to you again on Monday, and I thank you for these special reports. It's
you
really
bet.
Helpful.
No problem.
Chris Tonsing from the Middle East Report there on the web at merip.org, merip.org. And I just got word that Congressman Brad Sherman will be joining us in a few minutes, and it gives me the opportunity I was looking for to just pass along this important information related to the lawsuits filed against AT&T over its role in the NSA spying programs. This is a lawsuit that was filed in San Francisco in February by the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and it alleged that AT&T was collaborating with the NSA in a surveillance program tracking the domestic and foreign communications of millions of Americans, phone calls and emails, maybe more, but that's what we know. And it is very interesting. There's one courageous judge on the Federal District Court in Northern California, and his name is Vaughn R. Walker. Because he ruled yesterday that the government has opened the door for judicial inquiry by publicly confirming and denying material information about its monitoring of communications content. Because of the public disclosures by the government and AT&T, the court cannot conclude that merely maintaining this action creates a reasonable danger of harming national security. And he also rejected a separate motion to dismiss by AT&T, which had argued that its relationship with the government made it immune from prosecution. This is also rejecting the state secret assertion that the government has made, asking them to just dismiss the entire case or ship it off to a court like the FISA court where it would never see the light of day. So this is round 18 in what could be a 100-round game, but I just want to commend Judge Vaughn Walker for his courageous ruling yesterday. And here at the Peter B. Collins Show, we're observing our first anniversary. It was 1 year ago just this week that we launched on KRXA 540 in Monterey. And we're now up to four cities in the West and ready to grow some more. To celebrate our first anniversary, we're giving away a case of fine Central Coast wine from select vintners in Monterey County in the Santa Cruz Mountains, courtesy of our friends at Monterey Bay Wine Company. If you'd like to enter, just drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com. Include your name, address, a daytime phone, and indicate that you're at least 21 so I don't get in legal trouble. And tell me your most memorable moment of the Peter B. Collins Show over the past year. One entry per person, please. And if you don't have email, we'll still take your entry. Mail it to me with a stamp. Box 100, Mill Valley, California, 94942. That's P.O. Box 100, Mill Valley, 94942. We'll hold the drawing and announce the winner coming up on August 1st. 15 minutes past the hour, we're expecting Congressman Brad Sherman, the Democrat from Southern California, to join us next here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
I'm Chuck Mackley, owner of Executive Financial Services. I can get you up to 12% interest on your investment on first and second trust deeds secured by real property. Don't settle for 3 to 5% on your money. Call me today at 443-7277. Your investment will be protected by the equity in the property and title insurance. Put your hard-earned money to work. Call Executive Financial Services at 443-7277 and ask for Chuck Mackley.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
This week on Rock Roller Real Estate, meet Louis Basil of Jamestown Real Estate. And joining Louis will be Ronnie Bramer of New Horizon Real Estate Group of St. Petersburg, Florida. Ronnie and Louis will be sharing some great hot spots to invest in Florida and Louisville, Kentucky. That's this week on Rock Roller Real Estate. Heard every Sunday morning at 10. Listen online at rockrollerrealestate.com. For more information on this show and to be a guest, call 408-892-3376. 408-892-3376.
KRXA 540 checks your Friday afternoon commute. It's 419 now, and here's Larry Olson.
Yes, we'll start in Santa Clara County, eastbound 152 after Casa de Fruta. An accident has just been wrapped up. Could see some residual delays there. Watsonville Highway 1 at Jetty Road, two-car crash. CHP on the scene. That's Highway 1 at Jetty Road. Morgan Hill Road at Alpert Drive. Injury crash. Car and a bicyclist are involved. CHP on the scene. And finally, in Felton Empire Road at Highway 9. Pickup truck went over the roadway. That's Felton Empire Road at Highway 9. Pickup truck went off the side of the roadway there. Aches and pains keeping you up. Big news. New Advil PM is here. The multi-pain relieving power of Advil plus a gentle sleep aid. New Advil PM. Stop hurting and start sleeping. I'm Larry Olson with traffic on KRXA 540.
Thanks, Larry. We're going to check back with you in about half an hour. See if things get better or worse in the meantime. We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, 20 minutes past the hour. And joining us now is Democratic Congressman Brad Sherman from Sherman Oaks in Southern California. Brad, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Good to be with you again, Peter.
Nice to talk with you, and I want to share with our listeners that you and I joined forces back in the 1990s to overturn the dreaded snack tax in California.
Absolutely. We should tax people based upon their ability to pay, not based on their caloric intake.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's good to talk to you. And you're now in your sixth term in Congress. Is that about right?
Finishing up the fifth term.
Finishing up the fifth.
If I'm lucky in November, I'll be starting my sixth.
And did you draw any opposition in the primary?
Not in the primary, no.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But in the general election, I'm up against a Republican, and I'm fairly confident.
You, well, based on the way the maps are drawn and the service you provided, you're probably in pretty good shape. Brad, I contacted you because I saw you on a clip on television on the News Hour on PBS when they covered the quote-unquote hearing. It was really just more of a public relations event that was held in Imperial, California, near the Mexican border and south of San Diego, about 2 weeks ago? And this is one of many of these events that they are putting on across the country to try to drum up support for the meanest legislation on immigration that has been concocted recently, and that's known as the Sensenbrenner package from the House.
Mm-hmm. I'm the ranking Democrat on the subcommittee of the International Relations Committee that deals with how our foreign policy focuses on terrorism and nonproliferation. Our committee, our subcommittee, has no authority with regard to the border. We have a separate committee in Congress called the Homeland Security Committee. We have no authority over immigration laws. Usually what you do in Congress is you have hearings from the committee that's empowered to write the legislation. They learn from the hearings, then they write the legislation, and then the legislation goes to the floor. These hearings were asked backward every which way. First, the Sensenbrenner bill had been drafted. Then it had been passed by the House. And now we were going to have hearings to study the matter. And the people doing the studying was not the committee that had authority to write the legislation. And so the only way to describe this is that the reason we were down there at the U.S.-Mexico border was for a Republican dog and pony show.
And a photo op.
But what's surprising is, why would the Republicans want a dog and pony show when they have such ugly dogs and such mangy ponies? Peter, they've got an ugly record of failing to fund the Border Patrol. And they've got a mangy record of failure to adopt an immigration law that George Bush is willing to enforce. Do you know, in 2004, all over the country, do you think there were some employers who hired people who are not in the country legally?
I think so, yeah.
It could have happened.
But
do you know how many employers got fined nationwide?
I believe I do know that number, and can I get $50 from Jeopardy if I get it right?
No.
I have four fingers raised.
Ah, you're giving the Bush administration too much credit. It was three. Three employers nationwide got fined in 2004 by this administration. So the Republicans have been in total control of Washington, D.C., and they get zero control of the border.
Mm-hmm.
And Democrats have voted 10 different times to adequately fund the Border Patrol,
right?
And the Republicans refuse to go along.
And isn't it underfunded for the expansion projected for this year, where they allocated a couple of thousand positions and funded under 200?
The Bush administration in their budget put in 200.
Yeah.
Now, I will say this, the House Republicans, you know, were willing to go further than that. They just weren't willing to go up to the level that Congress had announced was the objective.
Mm-hmm.
We passed what we call the September 11th bill that said that we were going to increase the Border Patrol by several thousand each year for several years. We didn't do it. Keep in mind, the Border Patrol was growing at roughly 16% a year under Clinton,
mm-hmm.
and roughly 4% a year under Bush. And the difference is, Bush had 9/11.
Right.
Bush had the wake-up call, and he's catatonic.
We're talking with Brad Sherman, Democratic congressman from Southern California, here on the Peter B. Collins Show. So, is the best outcome that nothing happens on immigration this year because the House Republicans appear hell-bent on a draconian enforcement-only plan, and the president seems to be coming around to that, but I don't know that he has consensus in the Senate to change their legislation to match the House?
Well, obviously, the best result would be for our country to reach a consensus as to what our immigration policy is going to be, a policy that the Bush administration would be willing to enforce, a policy that was humane to the people that are here. Because, you know, I was down for hearings at the border, and I saw there are two huge billboards that we have facing the Mexican side of that border. One says, keep out, and the other one says, help wanted.
Yeah.
And then we wonder why people come into this country, and the answer is you've got no employer sanctions, you've got little border control, and you've got no consensus in this country as to what our policy is going to be, and therefore you have no enforcement. If you go to Burger King to buy a burger, we as a society are very serious that you're going to pay for that burger. So you got a debit card? That debit card's got a magnetic strip, a hologram, and a picture. God forbid you should get the burger for free. We're serious. You're going to pay for that burger. You got a debit card. It's got security in it. But let's say you go and you want to get a job at Burger King. Well, we don't really want to control that. Employers don't want to control that. We as a society don't have a consensus about whether to control that. So you go through this charade if you apply for a job at Burger King or any other employer in this country where you show documents that says that you're allowed to work here, but those documents have no magnetic strip, hologram, or picture, and they are so easy to forge that if anybody listening to this show paid $50 to get their documents, they got ripped off.
Mm-hmm. Now, Brad, the Republicans trot out business owners who say they've tried to work with the INS or whatever the department is at Homeland Security now that confirms citizenship or green card status, and that it's a mess. Is that true, or is that just an excuse they're using?
It's true, and it's an excuse. But keep in mind, who's been running the government since the year 2000?
Dick Cheney.
Yes. And has Dick Cheney provided an immigration service that works, even works for the employers? The answer is, in a way, it does work for the employers.
Yeah.
Because there's zero employer enforcement. So if you an employer who wants to obey the law, the system doesn't work because you can't get through on the line. But
Brad,
I
got to stop you there because we have a break that I can't control. I want to thank you for joining us. I'd like to have you back to talk about the Middle East because I know you sit on the Foreign Relations Committee, and I'd like to hear your views. So when we can schedule that, I'd welcome another conversation with you.
Look forward to it, Peter.
Brad Sherman, the Democrat from Sherman Oaks. Coming up next, we talk about the California Department of Corrections with Matt Gray from the Capital Alliance. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
Doesn't your Volvo deserve to be maintained and repaired by the best? Hans Auto Repair in Seaside is locally owned and operated by Mike Brooks and Tracy Polacco. Tracy is a factory-trained Volvo service advisor. Mike is a factory-trained and certified Volvo technician with over 17 years of experience servicing and repairing Volvos. Join the many Monterey Bay Volvo owners who only trust Hans Auto Repair to service their Volvos. Hans Auto Repair is at 384 Olympia Avenue in Seaside. Call Hans at 583-9820. That's 583-9820.
All you guys on the left, you demonize this president.
At Gitmo, they're not even garden variety POWs. They're the worst of the worst. They don't even receive the protection of the Geneva Conventions.
Man, I really believe that pagan and the abortionist and the feminine and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make that an alternative lifestyle, the ACLU, People for America, all of them who tried to secularize America, I point the thing in their face that you help this happen.
I totally concur. And the problem is we have adopted that agenda at the high levels of our government.
I believe Saddam Hussein is a threat to the American people. I've got good evidence to believe that.
Undeclared chemical warheads in Iraq.
The declaration that he made is proof positive.
Saddam Hussein possesses some of the world's deadliest weapons.
Saddam Hussein has biological weapons and the capability to rapidly produce more, many more.
The world is increasingly seeing this from the United States' point of view.
Saddam Hussein is not disarming.
Not disarming.
Saddam Hussein is not disarming.
In response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans, one is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and fun. I interview authors, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make the Monterey Bay area such a delicious slice of our tasty planet. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty new shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Sponsored in part by Kitchen Studio.
Politicians may come and go, but for the past 33 years, Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey. Technically proficient, Dr. Turner specializes in listening to every patient's concerns and feelings. And because Dr. Turner cares about you, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112, 831-375-1112, 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner, 375-1112. He listens, he cares. This portion of the Peter B. Collins Show is dedicated to guys serving hard time at Soledad and Pelican Bay. Thanks for listening, because you're within the sound of my voice. We need a few changes in the California Department of Corrections.
Tonight there's gonna be a jailbreak somewhere in this town. See, me and the boys, we don't like it, so we're getting up and going down. Looking right to left. If you see us coming, I think it's best to move away. Do you hear what I say from under my breath?
Now here at the Peter B. Collins Show, we do not counsel escape-related activities, but it's nice to fantasize about it, isn't it? That said, the California Department of Corrections is in shambles. The system is overcrowded. The system is eating a huge portion of the budget, over $6 billion a year in California, more than we spend on higher education, and the guards still rack up huge overtime without accountability. The healthcare system in the Department of Corrections is so bad, and a federal judge found that prisoners were dying as a result of inadequate healthcare delivery, that the healthcare system for the prisons, all of it, has been handed off to a special master of the court, a no-nonsense guy named Bob Sillin, who used to run the public health department in Santa Clara County. Governor Schwarzenegger does acknowledge the problems. In fact, he's called a special session of the legislature to try to deal with them. But there are many potential resolutions that he refuses to even consider. And one of them is to lighten the load of the prison system, reduce the chronic overcrowding by coming up with a thoughtful and rational way of reducing the population. Let's talk with Matt Gray. He is a lobbyist at the Capitol Alliance. He's a former deputy chief of staff to Senator John Vasconcellos, who was the dean of the legislature when he retired about 2 years ago. And John Vasconcellos, I worked for on his campaigns, a man I supported in almost every effort that he undertook. He had a real sense of being tough and smart on crime and knew what the problems were in the Department of Corrections. Matt Gray, thanks for joining us today on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, Peter. Thank you. It's great to talk to you again.
Well, and it's nice to talk to you. The last time I rang your phone, you picked it up on your cell, and you were holding your freshly born baby. Congratulations.
That's right. Thank you. A whopping 9 pounds, 1 ounce.
Yeah. I just felt so bad that I was interrupting a moment like that.
Oh, you know, when you're self-employed, you really don't get any time off. So I don't have any issue with it. Thank you, and it was nice to talk to you again.
Yeah. Well, Matt, I wanted to get your thoughts because we'll talk later in the segment here about an event that you're putting together for early August, trying to bring all the various interest groups together to talk about the problems that confront our prison system here in the state. You heard my introduction. What would you add to that about the serious issues that confront the California Department of Corrections?
Well, one of the serious issues is the big pink elephant in the room that no one seems to want to talk about, and that is what I've raised yesterday in an assembly committee on this assembly select committee on prison construction, chaired by Rudy Bermudez, who, as you know,
is a former CCPOA, California right. Correctional Prison Officers Association leader.
Right. It was chaired by him. And something I raised is we have to also look at the legislature, because the legislature has been so focused on being just tough on crime that they had no vision of where this was going to lead us. And we're there right now. And I wanted to say yesterday, and he almost threw me out of committee because I started finding fault with the facts and figures that he had so delightfully adopted as if they were the gospel. He literally told me he was ready to gavel and throw me out because he kept challenging my testimony.
Yeah, no. Such as? What did you take issue with?
I took issue with the facts and figures that were presented as if they were some academic research. They were not peer-reviewed, And there were several faults with the way that the materials were presented. The graphs that they used were misleading, and some statements that Mr. Bermudez had made were factually incorrect, such as the impact of Prop 36. Judge Henderson, who, as you know, is talking about taking over the entire system into federal custody,
mm-hmm.
he said there are about 23,000 inmates who should have been released under Prop 36, diversion. And Bermudez was trying to use it as a step-off point where he could attack the judge for what he had said, and simply stated he was misinformed. There are about mm-hmm. 31,000 inmates who, in reading through the materials, it was clear they were in not for person-on-person crimes, not for property crimes, but nothing other than drug crimes,
mm-hmm.
nonviolent drug crimes. And so when I pointed that out, he wasn't too happy about it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I pointed to the legislature as being one of the culpable parties to this problem that we now face, he was even less happy with me.
Yeah. And it's true. The legislature has been passing law after law after law, and it's been enhanced by some of the ballot measures like three strikes that are all aimed at putting more people into a prison system that is already at over 200% capacity.
It's as if they got their first paycheck. The legislature got their first paycheck, and the first credit card ran out and just charged it up, not even looking to what resources they might later have. They did the same with just stuffing our prisons full of people, never looking at how they were going to be released, what we were locking people up for. And I looked at, since 1974, there was a sevenfold increase in the amount of person-on-person crimes. For property crimes, there was a sevenfold increase. For drug offenses, nonviolent drug offenses, there was a 15-fold increase, 1,500% increase in the amount of people that were locking up for drug offenses, nonviolent. It's absurd.
There's a huge price that we pay for that, in particular because we're often sending people to an institute of higher learning to expand their skills, to find cohorts to join a gang, and you know, many the high recidivism rate we have, over 78% of the individuals who are released on parole wind up back in the slammer because they can't make it on the outside. We don't give them skills to make it legally, and what we do is enable them to find new friends and contacts so that they can get into the drug business or enhance their drug business when they're released.
Yep, they go in a novice and out a pro. We looked about 3 years ago. We were really curious, what is the recidivism rate? Because, you know, facts and figures can be cooked to suit someone's need, their intended goal. So we asked the legislative analyst's office to say, what is California's true rate of reoffense, the recidivism rate? They came back and said, well, you know, it's a real fuzzy number. It depends on how you look at the facts and figures, how long parole is, it's everything else. They said, but if we look at how most other jurisdictions do it, how do they do the calculations? Not California, mind you, but most other jurisdictions. It's the duration in which they're on parole and whether or not they successfully complete the terms and conditions of their parole, which sounds reasonable, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if we used California's rates and success rates and failure rates and plugged it into the same equation that most other states use, it actually came out to where 79% of our parolees failed to complete the terms and conditions of their parole.
Yeah.
4 in every 5 fail.
And now let's talk about Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, because since he came into office, I give him points in two directions. One is he at least acknowledged the perception that we need to offer rehabilitation in our prisons, so he renamed the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. Nothing has happened to implement the rehabilitation part of the name in any significant way. In fact, due to overtime for guards, many programs, helpful programs for inmates, educational training, social skills like Toastmasters, have been cut back or eliminated.
That's right.
But I give him credit for at least recognizing the problem. And secondly, Matt, during his first year in office, he addressed an issue that I know you care very deeply about because you and I have fought this on many occasions, and that is the interests of people who were sentenced to a sentence of up to life, 7 to life, 15 to life, whatever it happens to be. There are many individuals numbering over 20,000 who have far exceeded the lower limit of their sentence, and they are allegedly, eligible for release. But the way the politics of the parole system, the Board of Prison Terms, works here in California, the governor has the right to block those releases. So during his first year, I think about 55 lifers were released. And then as he went into the battle with his opponents last year, he locked it down. And now he's in reelection mode. So almost absolutely no life paroles are being granted. But he did at least seem to be willing to let that system operate the way it was intended. For a brief while. Now we see I can't remember the title of this fellow who published a report earlier this week, so help me with that, but he was lambasting the governor for his cozy relationship with the prison guards union.
That's Federal Master John Hagar.
Thank you.
And almost to the day, the governor was releasing people, and then suddenly, almost to the day, he stopped as soon as the crime victims' advocates started airing commercials saying that he was releasing murderers and rapists, et cetera, et cetera. And they were really misleading advertisements, but they worked. The governor puckered up, and he stopped releasing. Now, unfortunately, I like the governor. I think he has a lot of character. He has charm. He's funny. He doesn't have a whole lot of follow-through, but I think he has greater potential than certainly the past few governors that we've had. And he has shown a willingness to actually listen to different sides of the issue. Now, the group that I helped to found, Taxpayers for Improving Public Safety, is actually a union representing the inmates, their families, and other concerned taxpayers, of which you know John Vasconcellos is on the board, as is Richard Polanco and John Irwin. They have... they've retired. They've not gone far. They are very interested and personally vested in making sure that California's policy is appropriately followed and adhered to and is in the best interest of public safety. And that's what this really is all about. What affects public safety? If you look at nearly half of our prison population, they're in there for some non-public safety issue where they didn't actually hurt anyone. Mm-hmm. They did a cold burglary, and people are ticked off at them, sure. They're angry. Should they have done that? No. But are they a credible threat to public safety? No. So why are we locking them up in maximum security facilities instead of taking some other sanction against them to punish them?
Yeah. Matt, we got to take a break. We'll pick up there as we continue. We'll talk about the event that you're putting together in early August. And if you have a question or comment about the California prison system, this is the time to call. 831-899-5792 on the Central Coast, or toll free 888-579-2540. You're in tune with the Peter B. Collins Show.
Parents, do you need cash for college? This year, more than $100 billion is available for financial aid. Let AboutCollegeFunding.com help you navigate the complicated process to accessing your share of these funds. AboutCollegeFunding.com is now offering free one-hour consultations for parents in need of answers. To schedule your free one-hour consultation with RJ Moyet, call 1-888-337-9775. That's 1-888-337-9775.
Remember, the early bird gets the cash.
Hi, Dan Brown, president of At Your Service Premier Event Planning and Transportation. We specialize in events ranging from a two-person anniversary, our 200 guests attending the great AT&T or the concourse. We have a fleet of sedans, limousines, vans, mini coaches, as well as vintage cars that make any event special. Weddings, wine tours, or corporate events, give us a call, 625-5363, or check us out on the web, MontereyLimos.com. Our corporate transportation program offers competitive rates, we answer the phone 24/7, and you get a real person. And we have the best professional chauffeurs. We cover all the airports including San Francisco, San Jose, Oakland, and Monterey. We can help plan your company's VIP meeting or employee outing to the ball game. Let us take the worry and hassle out of your transportation or event. 625-5363 or MontereyLimos.com.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet Radio Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview nationally known writers, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty news shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
KRXA 540 looks at your traffic on this sizzling Friday afternoon. Here's Larry Olson.
And it is busy out there. A couple of problems in Santa Cruz and a couple of problems in Watsonville. Highway 1, a jetty injury crash, two cars, CHP on the scene. Also in Watsonville, Carlton Road at Highway 129, an SUV went off the roadway and landed in a ditch. A fire is burning underneath the car there. Santa Cruz, Selfwell, San Jose Road at North Summit. Pickup truck hit a tree and it's blocking some lanes. Also, Selfwell, San Jose Road at Miller injury crash. A couple of cars involved. One of those still blocking some lanes. You could win a free Shell gas card worth of $25 or $50. Hurry so you can fill up those tanks for that long summer road trip. Call 888-898-6402. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 or older to enter. I'm Larry Olson with traffic on KRXA 540.
Larry, we're going to check back with you in about a half an hour.
Sounds good.
All right. Hope things keep moving smoothly or get better, depending on your problems. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. Collins, we're talking about California's deeply troubled Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. That's the official name. And Matt Gray is with us. He represents Taxpayers for Improving Public Safety. And I just had to play the Clash version there of I Fought the Law. A few years back, I helped put together a benefit concert for inmates at San Quentin State Prison. And Greg Kinn opened the show for us. He's a great rock and roll guy, now a DJ. And he insisted on opening with that song, and it was a big hit with the prisoners. Matt, coming back to the more serious issues facing corrections in this state, we have a dynamic. You talked earlier about your testimony before the Assembly Committee with Chair Rudy Bermudez, a former prison guard, and you pointed a finger at the legislature. I think that's appropriate. But don't we also have to point a finger at the people of California? Because they have repeatedly embraced the fear tactics and the fear-mongering that have led to legislation like the three strikes law and the ballot measure that locked it in. And many legislators are deeply afraid that if they show the courage that your former boss, John Vasconcellos, did about being smart about crime and not just being tough, that they would lose their elected seat. They really do feel that if a Democrat in particular is perceived as soft on crime, that they won't hold on to their elective office.
That's true, and they do. And when someone opposes them in an election, they are very ferocious, the prison guards, about going after that person, sending out mail outs, spending $100,000 and $200,000. They even put in $75,000 against John Vasconcellos to try to get him out of office, and that didn't work at all. The voters, unfortunately, are kind of the mindset that out of sight, out of mind, they don't think a whole lot about what's going on in our prison system. But what each and every taxpayer should realize is the prison guards union owns you. They own the quality of your public education, because corrections, our prison system, competes with public education for dollars. They own the quality of the social services that we all receive. They own the quality of the roads that get paved, because all of these have to compete with corrections, which, by the way, grows at between $400 million and a billion dollars every year. It just keeps shooting up. It's staggering.
And at that, it's underfunded because we know that Bob Sillin is going to demand hundreds of millions of dollars to try to ameliorate the problems in the healthcare system alone.
More every year. You're right. And so what we've done is we've proposed to the governor some ideas that would still accomplish what he's trying to accomplish and also appease the federal government. We say the governor says he wants to build two more prisons. We say that's ridiculous. No more prisons. What we really need to do is build more hospital facilities for the physical, for the mental, for the geriatric, and for the substance abuse needs of our inmates. We need about 5 or 6 new hospitals throughout the state. And then what we also need to do is we need to allow our foreign-born inmates the opportunity to go into federal custody. It is a federal issue. The state should not be paying for it. And we've targeted a dollar amount of about $690 million that we could save in 1 year alone by doing that. These inmates who are going into federal custody would get better conditions than California prisons. And in many cases, they could also go back home to be closest to their families, and which is, of course, very important to rehabilitative success of each inmate, being close to their families and communities. And so in doing that, that's about 23,000 inmates that we could move into federal custody, about 5,000 or 6,000 inmates that we could put into these hospitals, and then the 23,000 inmates that Judge Henderson has identified that should be released because they're nonviolent drug offenders, we're at 51,000 inmates that we could readily remove from the overpopulated prisons that we have right now. That's a huge decrease in the prison population.
And just as you hear those numbers, we're currently at about 165,000 males incarcerated in California.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Now, Matt, when you look at this picture, we have the special emergency session of the legislature coming up. What are you proposing in the conference that you are gathering people for in August? What's the agenda, and how's it going to work to bring these different interest groups together?
Well, the conference is on August 10th, starting at 1 o'clock in the Senate Hearing Room 4203 in the state capitol in Sacramento, August 10th. What we are proposing is, one, we realize there are a number of disparate groups. There's the crime victims groups, there's the prison guard and law enforcement groups, there's the prison reform groups. However, none of them are talking to one another very well. So we realize we must be able to communicate with the people we disagree with if we're ever going to first find our common ground, and second, move beyond that and work towards constructive solutions. So that's really what this is about. We have a number of experts, anywhere from L.A. Sheriff Lee Baca's office coming up to Charles Carbone of the Prison Law Office to even representatives from Crime Victims United and the CCPOA are coming to talk to the crowd about what is not working and what they see as the solution. And we've had a number of constructive dialogues with the crime victims groups and with the guards so far. And they realize that what we're doing ain't working. We can't keep doing it this way. We cannot keep warehousing people. And none of us are any safer as a result of the present approach to corrections, which is phenomenal because none of us in all of our history have had that dialogue yet. Finally, we have. So we're going to bring together the top experts throughout California. Bob Sillin is going to be there from the Judge Henderson's court, and we're going to focus on constructing the California blueprint for public safety, all the way from the point of first contact with a alleged offender to the point when you ultimately release someone. What needs to be done to make sure it works, they stay out of prison, and they become a constructive member of society, and it improves public safety. That's our focus.
Well, Matt, Gunga Din comes to mind here because you're a better man than I am.
I don't know about that. We're all in it. We all do our piece.
Well, it's just, for me, I have had these encounters in legislative hearings where I was trying to foster the legislation that would ease the plight of life prisoners who I think deserve a fair shake, not an automatic release, just an honest evaluation of their suitability for parole as called for in our law. And when I went to testify on behalf of some of those reforms with Senator Polanco, each time the CCPOA and people from the organization they fund, called Crime Victims United, would come in and offer emotional testimony, which was wide of the mark. They weren't really talking about the issue of the day. They would just talk about their own sense of loss. And I truly honor the victims of crime. I do not have any sense of anger toward them, only compassion. It's just when the people who are most emotional and most affected by things are permitted to drive legislation, we don't end up with legislation that is fair or just.
No, get emotions out of politics and make rational decisions. Here's something very encouraging, though. I've had a number of discussions with Crime Victims United and other victims groups. We've even started our own Victims Foundation because we realize that there are a number of victims who are not being represented and do not want to hurt inmates. They want to actually improve public safety. So here's something that the victims groups have come back to me with. Yes, we realize there are a number of indeterminately sentenced lifers who are not being treated fairly. We don't support the mistreatment of them. We know there are a number who deserve to be released who are not being released. That dialogue has not happened before, and they're finally to a point where they admit it, they realize it, and they want to do something constructive to fix the problem.
Mm-hmm.
We need to have this dialogue.
Well, Matt, I want to thank you for your work, and I want to direct interested parties to this event on August 10th in the Senate hearing room. And you can get more information at the website correctionsreform.com. Matt Gray from Taxpayers for Improving Public Safety. And any other websites where people could get information on this, Matt?
They could go to the three words, forpublicsafety.com.
Forpublicsafety.com. All right, sir.
Thank you,
Peter.
Well,
again, congratulations on your new baby. Thanks for all the work you do, and let's talk again before August.
I look forward to it. I'll see you later. Thanks.
That's Matt Gray in Sacramento. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Mark Ash. He's the editor of truthout.org. They were hacked earlier this week, and they need your support. We'll talk about that and Jason Leopold's reporting. Plus, State Senator Deborah Bowen's on the way in the next hour, and John Gideon sits in for Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. That's all ahead on the Peter B. Collins Show.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice says she'll leave for the Middle East on Sunday.
The goal of my trip is to work with our partners to help create conditions that can lead to a lasting and sustainable end to the violence.
The violence continued for a 10th day. That was the sound in Haifa, Israel, where more Hezbollah missiles rained down, injuring 19 people. CBS News correspondent Lara Logan reports the Israeli army continued its buildup along the border.
Today, Israel upped the ante by preparing the ground inside South Lebanon for an invading force. Leaflets dropped from the sky warned Lebanese civilians to withdraw behind the Litani River, some 13 miles inside Lebanese territory, an indication of the planned area of operations. They also sent more troops across the border on pinpoint raids and maintained the pressure with continued artillery attacks.
Reportedly, Israel does not plan a full-scale invasion. For the second time in 3 days, parts of the Midwest have been battered by storms, a big setback for utility crews. In the St. Louis area now, nearly 500,000 homes and businesses are without power. Patty York, the mayor of St. Charles, Missouri, says about three-quarters of that city has no electricity.
Street lights out. Traffic is a nightmare. People have all kind of left work and are trying to get home. We're putting up temporary stop signs as everywhere that we can.
John Mills of CBS television affiliate KMOV went to Trenton, Illinois, where power lines were ripped down and roads were blocked by falling trees.
The only good news in all of this is that the storms have brought with them cooler temperatures. So we're talking about temperatures in the 80s, still high humidity, but nowhere near those 100-degree temperatures we've had for the last few days.
In Oklahoma City, where it hit 107 today, a section of Interstate 44 buckled from the heat. Eight people have been hospitalized in Worcester, Massachusetts after being struck by lightning. One woman nearly died. Police say they were standing near a tree when the bolt hit. Jack Warden's business manager says it was old age. Everything gave up. Out. The actor died at a hospital in New York Wednesday. He was 85. Warden was a fixture in the movies. Here's a clip from the 1979 film, And Justice for All.
You are out of order!
You're out of order! You're out of order! The whole trial is out of order! Get me out of here! Get me out of here!
Gentlemen, need I remind you, you are in a court of law?
Leonard Maltin of Entertainment Tonight looks at Jack Warden's career.
He got two Oscar nominations. He was in great films like All the President's Men, Shampoo. He got an Oscar nomination for Heaven Can Wait, TV series of The Bad News Bears. He never stopped working.
Warden starred in the 1980s TV comedy Crazy Like a Fox. On Wall Street, a down day. The Dow Industrials lost 59 points to finish the week at 10,868. The Nasdaq down 19. This is CBS News.
It's a never-ending necessity for more and more office space.
For retail leases, I hand you, it's almost a book.
50 pages of legalese.
I am not going to be able to do this.
Calling the realtor should be the first thing you do.
When he got here, I could see he was wearing that realtor pin.
That's the guy to talk to.
Buying or leasing a commercial property? Let someone with expertise and experience be your partner. Ask your agent if they're a realtor, a member of the National Association of Realtors.
Really helped me take my business where I wanted it to go.
A message from your local, state, and national realtor associations.
Wake up! It's time for the semi-annual jewelry and watch sale at Overstock.com. If you're looking for a fun fashion statement with some bling or exquisite jewelry by some of the hottest designers, like John Atencio and Damiani, Overstock.com has reduced prices at an additional 15%. Stunning watches by Invicta, Movado, Tag Heuer, and more. Name brands up to 70% off. Don't wait. The sale ends midnight July 24th. Shop Overstock.com.
The rape trial got national attention, and former Naval Academy quarterback Lamar Owens was convicted on two lesser charges. But WTOP Radio's Neil Augenstein reports he can still pursue his dream of a career in the Navy.
The punishment? No punishment. The military panel that cleared Owens of a rape charge and convicted him of conduct unbecoming an officer could have imposed 18 months in prison or had Owens dismissed from the Navy.
They had to come to terms with their decision and decide punishment. And the punishment they found appropriate was no punishment. That speaks volumes.
Owens attorney Reed Weingarten. In court, Owens apologized for the attention he brought to the Naval Academy. He made no mention of the woman who accused him. Neil Augenstein for CBS News, Washington.
Tragedy today at the Elephant Sanctuary in southern Tennessee. A female handler was killed, another handler injured by an elephant. We don't know the circumstances. In some cases, elephants at the sanctuary are used to perform in circuses. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Big meeting in the morning and you're ready. All you need is a good night's sleep, but you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning and the pain.
Ooh.
Is driving you insane.
I gotta get some sleep. I should use Preparation H.
Why keep tossing and turning because of the itching and burning? Use Preparation H cream with maximum strength pain relief. Relieves burning and itching and adds maximum strength pain relief on contact. Nighttime's the right time, too.
Ah.
For Preparation H cream, pain relief on contact. Use as directed.
Net Zero, America's number one value-priced internet service, is only $9.95 a month, and there's no commitment and no credit card required. Signing up for Net Zero is so simple, you'll be online in minutes. Plus, Net Zero gives you powerful virus protection, and your service is backed by a connection guarantee. Join the millions of people who have switched to the internet service that ranks higher than AOL in customer satisfaction. Call 1-800-NET-ZERO or go to netzero.com.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show as we get ready for a hot summer weekend on the left coast. Can you chill some down for me? Coming up in just a few minutes here on the Peter B. Collins Show, we'll be joined by State Senator Deborah Bowen, the Democratic nominee for Secretary of State in this November's California election. And she's been watching the Diebold machines and voting integrity issues. She's got an announcement to make about a new committee in the legislature to deal with these issues. And we're going to miss Brad today. Brad Friedman is actually trying to take some time off. If you go to the blog, you'll see he's not being too successful. But we're going to honor our commitment to give him the day off from the PBC show today. I don't know how long it'll last, though. John Gideon, who blogs at BradBlog, will be joining us in the Bradness stead coming up about a half an hour away. Joining us now is Mark Ash, the executive editor at truthout.org. Hello, Mark. Welcome back to our show.
Greetings. Thanks for having me.
Well, nice to talk with you. I wanted to catch up with you on a couple of fronts. First of all, I noticed that the site was down for a while this week, and you sent out a notice that you had been a victim of hackers.
Yeah, it looks like we had a little visitation from a young gamer in the Phoenix area.
I see. So it wasn't anything really dark or conspiratorial like the NSA?
No, it's pretty juvenile and immature, I thought.
Yeah.
But that's my opinion.
And do you care to say what they did, or would that just encourage others?
This person felt compelled to post a social and political message that, frankly, if they had posted it on our blog, we would not have deleted it. It would still be there.
Really?
And people would still be reading it, but they felt it's funny. You know, you're dealing when you deal with bloggers or with hackers or crackers, as they call themselves. They get a big thrill out of being able to accomplish getting into the site and being able to do their thing and being able to kind of like tag your site.
Yeah, digital taggers.
And it's kind of a thrill thing. And he said hello to his girlfriend while he was there. Hi, girlfriend's name. And for him, this is like a thrill. So
yeah.
You know, that's what it took to get him to the point of joy, I guess.
Yeah. The other thing I took note of is that you're in the middle of your summer fundraising drive, and you need more people to step up.
That would be great. That would be great. I'd just like to remind everybody that we don't take any commercial dollars whatsoever. And if we did, we would have more money in the bank account.
Yeah. Well, I've never found a pop-up ad on truthout.org. I don't think that ever happens, does it?
It doesn't. And nor do we. I mean, we've been offered for mailing lists, or, you know, there is a lot of money involved in mailing lists. People offer us money for mailing lists all the time. We never even review those offers. We reject them outright. But, you know, we think that based on what we're able to accomplish with the budget we have, we think that a lot of people ought to take this a little bit more seriously. Many of our readers actually, you know, they have cable contracts with the local cable companies. They're paying like $4.30, $40, $50 a month for cable service, but they don't support independent news sources nearly as faithfully.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, if you take a look at cable, you're talking CNN, you're talking MSNBC, you're talking, I guess there's the Fox News version of cable news, but I mean, come on now, folks. You know, I mean, that's what you're going to get.
All right, so if I want to contribute, and I've done so in the past, I go to truthout.org and?
Hit the D. There's a big D on the left-hand side.
That says donate.
Hit the donate button.
And there's a snail mail address. If you don't like to use your credit card on the web, or maybe you don't have a credit card, you can mail a check. You probably accept cash, too. Rather not.
I don't think we reject cash. I don't think we encourage it, though.
And Bill Jefferson, don't send any of that cash from your freezer, okay? those bills are marked, and even if you want to help Truth Out, it probably wouldn't be a great idea.
When you put the money in the freezer, that's how they came up with the name Hard Cold Cash.
Yeah, yeah. Mark, I also wanted to talk to you about the work of Jason Leopold, and I just want to tell you up front that I fully support Jason, and we continue to have him on our program. I know that some people have flamed Truth Out. Some people have either, you know, asked to unsubscribe. Perhaps some contributors have fallen away as well. But I want you to know that I honor his integrity, and I feel that you handled the story in a very ethical and upfront way, given the circumstances. And I just want to put in a vote of confidence for you and the editorial decisions that you made and the fact that you still publish Jason Leopold.
Well, appreciate it. Briefly, just for all those that are following the story, we've done our homework. We've crossed our T's and dotted our I's. Yes, we absolutely believe the jury and panel to hear the Karlov and Fitzgerald matter did in fact return an indictment. That indictment was used to basically wave in Karl Rove's face in an attempt to gain information, apparently on Dick Cheney. Apparently the information that he provided to Fitzgerald was what Fitzgerald believed to be of high value. And in return, they agreed to keep the indictment under seal, which it still is, and not go public with it.
Yeah. Mark, you have to be scratching your head, and maybe to the point that there are scabs there. But the corporate media in this country has taken the word of a partisan attorney for a person who is a person of interest in a major investigation. And as Jason has recapped for us and done so in print at truthout.org, the special prosecutor, Mr. Fitzgerald, has still not confirmed or denied the assertions of Robert Luskin, the attorney for Karl Rove. Yet the media has just accepted this at face value, asked very few questions, and not even probed into the possibility of the scenario that you just described, that yes, indeed, there was an indictment. It was used to leverage and pressure him, and he coughed up something, and therefore, Luskin received a note, I believe, that read to the effect that there would be no indictment at this time. But it has been played repeatedly that Karl Rove has been exonerated. He has not been exonerated.
No, not by a long shot. And that was an excerpt from what Luskin says the facts that he received contained. But no one to this day has seen that fax. And it is. It's very frustrating. If we tried to report our facts that way, we would be flame broiled. I mean, if we said, oh, by the way, we got a fax from someone that says, by the way, this is what it says, and have a nice day, and the New York Times and every other publication, major mainstream publication in the country, trumpeted that as gospel, I mean, you've got to be kidding.
Mm-hmm.
If we tried that, we would be flame broiled.
Now, Mark, let me follow the scenario here for a moment. If we accept what you just said, that Rove was indeed indicted, he coughed up something on Cheney, and that was enough to keep Fitzgerald from going forward at this time. And
there was a long process of negotiation between Fitzgerald, Rove, and Luskin, and
mm-hmm.
they kept pressuring him, and they kept threatening him. They kept saying, we're going to go public, and that is why this information was leaked to our publication.
Now, do you think that Rove believes that in giving that information up about Cheney, that Cheney in turn will declare that he is immune, as a president is? That's an untested legal theory, but do you think that that is the ballgame here?
I think, frankly, I am not incredibly optimistic that sealed indictment, for which we have provided a case number, 06-CR-128, will become unsealed. It is, I am told by our sources, an indictment of Karl Rove. However, I am not incredibly optimistic that they will necessarily ever go public with that. I think that Fat Patrick Fitzgerald is being pressured by two from between a rock and a hard place. One, I think, is being pressured by Gonzalez, either from the front side or the back side. And B, I think I know that they are examining, the Fitzgerald camp is examining the constitutional ramifications of confronting a sitting vice president a sitting vice president.
Yeah.
So we'll see where that goes.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not incredibly optimistic they're necessarily going to go public at this point. I mean, we assumed when we learned that an indictment had been returned, we assumed that they would go public with that forthwith.
Sure.
That was an unfortunate assumption on our part,
mm-hmm.
and it confused and upset a lot of people, and we are deeply sorry for that. Does the indictment exist? Absolutely. And
well, Mark,
Jason Leopold, just because you raised his issue, Jason Leopold, honestly, is what makes him so interesting is with all of the stuff that goes on in the background there that he has worked so hard to publicize about himself.
Yeah,
he usually ends up being right, and that is what makes him such a triple threat.
Yeah. Well, Mark, I appreciate your work and keep on doing it.
Peter, thank you guys up there.
I want you to be
consistent. We love that.
Be as undeterred as you possibly can.
Oh, we're totally undeterred. Trust us.
Truthout.org. Hit the homepage, click the D, and donate if you possibly can to keep this important media service available to us. Thank you, Mark.
Bye now.
Coming up next, we're going to talk with State Senator Deborah Bowen right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. ¶¶ Do you have a living trust? Lawyers on Duty is offering a living trust package for just $995. If you're single, only $895. Give your loved ones the safety net by saving them thousands of dollars by avoiding cumbersome legal proceedings. At Lawyers on Duty, they're available and affordable. With over 1,000 living trusts completed locally, they'll work with you to avoid costly probate. Behind Rosine's on Alvarado Street, downtown Monterey. Lawyers on Duty, 375-5100. Alan Kaplan, owner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview nationally known writers, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty new shows. Sponsored by the Monterey County Vintners and Growers Association's 14th Annual Winemaker Celebration on August 12th from noon until 4 p.m. For more information, go to the web at montereywines.org.
KRXA 540 checking your traffic on this hot Friday afternoon. Here's Larry Olson.
It is definitely busy. Santa Clara County, 152 at Pole Line Road. Solo accident, right shoulder. Minor injuries have been reported. CHP en route to figure out what's going on. Watsonville, Carlton Road at Highway 129. An SUV went off the roadway, landed in a ditch. A tow truck is en route. Santa Cruz County, Soquel, San Jose Road at North Summit. Injury crash. Pickup truck hit a tree. It's blocking some lanes. Soquel, San Jose Road at Miller. Injury crash involving two cars, one blocking the lanes, another one went into a ditch there. The home of your dreams at a price you never dreamed possible. Mossdale Landing, 8 builders, 40 home plans, and 34 model homes in Lathrop's first master plan community. Visit MossdaleLanding.com. I'm Larry Olson with traffic on KRXA 540.
Thanks, Larry. And let's say Soquel. That Q is not Q.
Soquel.
It's just Soquel.
Soquel.
All right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thanks a lot. You've got the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 20 minutes past the hour here on a Friday afternoon, and usually we introduce his Bradness at this point, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, but he claims he's taking a little vacation, even though if you go to the blog, you see he's as active as usual. He was on Court TV with Catherine Cryer and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. last night or the night before. I didn't get to see it. We're joined now, though, by State Senator Deborah Bowen, Democrat from Marina Del Rey, who is the nominee of the Democratic Party for Secretary of State this November, and I'm one person who thinks that she'll do a great job if we can get her elected into that post. Deborah Bowen, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show today.
Good to be with you.
How's it going with the campaign? I told my producer, Matt Renner, I'll bet Senator Bowen's not available because, you know, the whole legislature's on vacation.
Well, it is the Saturday, it's a late Friday afternoon, and it's actually a good time to talk to legislators because we don't have much of an excuse for not being available. I mean, it's not like I could be in a hearing right now.
Yeah, yeah. So. Well, I wanted to ask you first and foremost about the issue that Brad has been working so diligently on, and that is District 50, the congressional special election that was held concurrently with our primary on June 6th. And the declared winner is the Republican Brian Bilbray. But as Brad has pointed out, there have been many serious security errors. The chain of custody was not maintained, and many of the voting machines, two types, touchscreen machines mostly used by handicapped voters and tabulator machines, the optical scanners, were not kept in the custody of election officials, but instead were handed out to temporary workers who conduct the elections and work at the polling places. And this is a direct violation of the security protocols that were put in place by Bruce McPherson, the current Secretary of State, when he recertified Diebold machines for this election cycle.
Yeah, we've had some major concerns about that, as well as about some things that happened in the June primary. And so I have put together a select committee on the integrity of elections, and we are going to be looking at that, as well as at what happened in Kern County, where we had some polling places that didn't open until 10 or 10:30, and all kinds of issues.
San Joaquin County reported similar problems.
San Joaquin County will be looking at as well. And I want to let your listeners know that starting Monday morning, we will have a toll-free number so that anybody who had a difficulty on Election Day or who would like to talk to the committee, has a story to report, can call us toll-free.
Okay. Do you know the number yet?
It's 888-828-3855.
Okay.
And people can also email us. The email address is election.integrity@sen.ca.gov.
Okay.
So we definitely want to hear from people about any experiences that they had.
Mm-hmm.
We want to learn from whatever happened.
Let me repeat that information. The toll-free number is 888-828-3855. Won't
right.
be in service till Monday.
Correct.
But it's toll-free statewide, 888-828-3855.
Mm-hmm.
And the email, election.integrity@sen.ca.gov.
That's correct.
Great. And how do you hope to proceed with this information? Will it be primarily fact-finding, or do you expect legislation to arise from it?
Well, I always like to start by learning the facts before I take action. I think it's generally a good way for all of us to proceed in life. We're going to start in Kern County. We will be holding a hearing on Monday, July 31st in Bakersfield because it's just not hot enough in other parts of the state. Sorry, I couldn't resist.
I'm glad you didn't.
So we'll be doing that, and then we are currently in the process of setting up dates when we can go explore. And you know, there's some issues. Some of them have to do with voting equipment, and others are more basic. And I think we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that in every election there are problems. Part of what you want to do is plan for how you're going to deal with any issues that arise. That's why we have paper ballots as backups in polling places. And then really learn so that we don't have to repeat the same mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the machines can be salvaged?
Well, I was very concerned about the fact that machines were sent home with people in some instances, as I understand it, and I haven't confirmed this from the poll workers yet, but I understand that machines were sent home with people as much as 2 weeks in advance.
Mm-hmm.
And given what we know about the security issues, the fact that the federal government, the General Accounting Office, identified a huge number of vulnerabilities, security vulnerabilities, and in fact our current Secretary of State, in certifying these machines, set up a number of conditions, one of which is that the machines couldn't go out of the custody of the election workers.
Right.
And I don't know about your garage or your car, but mine is certainly accessible to people other than me over any given 2-week period.
Well, and there's never been a car in my garage, actually. So if they could
well, you're
find,
like many other Californians as well, actually.
If they could find the Diebold machine in my garage.
My garage isn't a garage at this point. It's a legally converted something else. I'm not quite sure what it is.
Oh,
but,
yeah. Well, but one of the other concerns, Senator, was the we know about this infrared port that is installed in many of the machines, and Diebold says, well, they're not active.
Mm-hmm.
But the concern is that with the right software and knowledge, that somebody with a simple BlackBerry or Trio, who's not even immediately in the presence of a machine, could access it and change the memory card.
Yeah. Well, there are a whole variety of concerns like that, and certainly when the machines are left unattended or in a place where they could be accessed, you know, the likelihood that somebody got into a machine and tampered is probably fairly low, but that's not the point. The point is that in the outcome of any election should be free from doubt about what may or may not have happened mm-hmm. to the voting equipment or the ballots, if they're paper ballots, in the time before the election or after the polls close.
Just a minute remaining and a slightly different question, Senator Bowen. One of the things I see is that we don't have uniform policies county to county in California. Is there a way we can try to move toward uniform voting standards, counting standards, and certification standards?
That's actually a great question. It's something I've been thinking about. Obviously, the upside of doing that is that it's much easier to get accustomed to one set of security requirements. It's certainly easier for the public to monitor what's happening if you only have to learn one system rather than 58 in California's 58 counties. But I have had some people say to me, you know, the benefit of having the different county systems is that you can't hack all 58 counties or steal all the elections in multiple places.
Yeah, but we're seeing with this demand for a hand count in San Diego, they've jacked up the price.
Yeah.
A hand count in Orange County's 14 cents a vote. It's over a buck a vote in San Diego. Those are the kinds of things that could be ironed out.
I really believe that having one standard is appropriate. In fact, when we go...
Got to stop there, Senator Bowen. Sorry, we'll talk again soon.
Great, look forward to it.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Monta Vista Wine and Spirits in Monterey has everything you need, from high-end liquor to the very best in fine wines. It's the real deal. Family owned for over 40 years, John will give you one-on-one personal attention, just like family. Have a special request? Not a problem. Open every day from 9 to 9. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is located on Soledad Drive in Monta Vista Village, near the Del Monte Center. Look for Doug Huckleberry, who greets you at the door. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits wants you to please drink responsibly.
Join R.J. Moyer for his weekend show about college funding this Saturday at 10 a.m. on KRXA 540. R.J. Moyer brings to the microphone a unique perspective on the benefits of a college education, and he shares with you his knowledge on how to substantially reduce your out-of-pocket college expenses.
This is R.J. Moyer. Join me for About College Funding Saturday morning at 10 on KRXA 540, sponsored in part by The Potting Shed in Aptos.
Childhood Matters, the show for parents and everyone who cares about our kids.
This Sunday, we'll be joined by Joe Kelly, the author of Dads and Daughters, How to Inspire, Understand, and Support Your Daughter When She's Growing Up So Fast. I'm Nurse Rona, and I would love to hear from dads who are doing the best they can to understand their daughters.
Childhood Matters, this Sunday morning at 9 on KRXA 540. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Would you like to be part of a conversation that might not only inspire your golf game, but have you thinking differently about sports, about learning, and about performance? Join golf pro and best-selling author Fred Shoemaker on KRXA 540 Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. for Extraordinary Golf, some uncommon conversations about golf, and maybe even a little beyond golf. Extraordinary Golf, Saturday mornings on KRXA 540 at 8 a.m.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. I am your humble host, Peter B., on this sizzling Friday evening. I'm glad you found us on your radio dial.
Interrupting all programs. This radio comes from pirate satellite. Orbiting your living room, cashing in the Bill of Rights. Human army surplus or refusing of the light. This radio comes from pirate satellite.
Guys, I think that's a little grandiose, Mick, Joe. It's just the Peter B. Collins Show. Hardly radio clash on a pirate satellite. We continue now with John Gideon, who is guest blogging for Brad Friedman at bradblog.com this week. John is the blogger of votersunite.org and votetrustusa.org. Hello again, John.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me on again.
Oh, it's nice to talk with you. How's it going?
It's other than it's been over 100 degrees right now up here in Washington State, it's going all right.
Well, I think the whole country more or less is cooking. It's sizzling hot here in California as well. John, first up, I wanted to see if you have any fresh developments on Brad's number one case right now, which is the Busbee-Bilbray race, California District 50. We were just chatting with State Senator Deborah Bowen, the candidate for Secretary of State here in California, about that a moment ago. Any new developments in the demand for a hand count by a woman named Jacobson?
Nothing I've seen other than today they had a rally at the county offices. But other than that, I haven't really seen a whole lot. The media is not, as we all know, the media is kind of ignoring this.
And has Michael Haas, the registrar of voters, made any further moves to reduce the cost of the hand count?
I'm sorry, I'm chuckling a little bit.
No, it's okay.
I had nothing I've heard of, and I'm sure that would become big news if that happened.
Right. Well, there was a famous progressive radio newscaster in San Francisco who had a phrase that if you don't like the news, go out and make some of your own. That's my buddy Scoop Nisker. And Brad's been making news this week with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. They made a joint appearance on Court TV's Catherine Cryer show. And the clip is up at bradblog.com, but I haven't had a chance to check it out yet. What's your review on his Bradness's performance, John?
Oh, well, he's good. He's an actor at by trade, so he did a really good job. Of course, Bobby Kennedy is just the guy's special. So it's really good that he's working with us now, and. I've been doing this for over 3 years, and we've constantly looking for people to step up that have got a name and get behind this movement. And it's starting to happen now, so that's all. It's always good.
Well, RFK Jr., of course, wrote a piece in Rolling Stone that has garnered a great deal of attention. We spoke to Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, who read it, and then in a speech acknowledged that she believes the Ohio election was stolen, and she went out of her way to apologize to people like you and Brad, John, who have been articulating these issues to mostly a brick wall for the last 3 years.
Yeah, you know, it's really strange. This week on Wednesday, the House Science and, I believe, Administrative Committees had a joint testimony committee meeting where they took testimony. And, of course, the Republicans, because they're in charge, they got to name, I think it was five experts to give testimony, and the Democrats, unfortunately, only got to name one. And the Democrats kind of lost they lost their real choice because they picked the chief election official for Maryland, who is an anti-paper ballot type. But the congressional hearing, I mean, everything that was said and done in that meeting was just, it was really great. The people, they all seemed to know. Even Bob Ney came out and admitted that Ohio uses paper ballots. He's got still got some problems, but
this is Congressman Bob Ney, who is under deep investigation in the Abramoff scandal.
Right.
He is the congressman from Diebold, although I don't think Diebold's headquarters is quite in his district. And Ney is under big heat because he's looking at Ralph Reed's defeat in Georgia, having been linked to Abramoff, and is very concerned. Now, one of the things that surfaced in relation to Bob Ney, John Gideon, is the extent to which he is connected to Diebold. We know he's gotten campaign contributions from that company, but he was the author of the Help America Vote Act. So there are many people who are concerned about that relationship.
And rightfully so. I think that a lot of what's in the Help America Vote Act was very much driven by what the voting machine vendors wanted. It wasn't just Diebold. I think that all the vendors, via their ties with the ITAA, International Technical, I'm not going to get the
other letters. That's okay.
Letters, right? But anyway, it's their lobbying group. They all got together and formed this lobbying group, which has and in fact, John Groh, who is a vice president, I believe, at ESNS, was one of the people that gave testimony, and pretty much got his hat handed to him, and as did the Danetta Davidson from the AC and Linda Lamone, and most of the others that gave testimony were really strong for what, things that we would like to see taken care of. So
now, I diverted your attention there a moment ago from Congressman Ney.
Yep.
Did he make any statements in this hearing that actually lead you to believe that he sees the seriousness of the problem?
No.
Okay.
The only thing he had to say was that Ohio has a voter-verified paper audit trail, and that in when they hold hearings again in September, he wants to stress the fact that, in his opinion, the voter-verified paper audit trail does not support voters with disabilities,
A peripheral issue.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you have any new information about the race in Georgia, the primary race, with Cynthia McKinney, the incumbent? She's had an up-and-down career. Democrats ganged up on her and took her out of office in 2002. She returned in 2004, and now in the primary, there were reports of pretty serious allegations from voters that when they went into a DRE, a touchscreen voting machine, that they voted for McKinney, and the machine registered a vote for her opponent. I think his name is John Hill.
The only reports that I've seen since the press release on Tuesday that McKinney's workers or campaign put out
mm-hmm.
is that the state, I believe it is responded back and said that, in fact, voters, if they go to the polls and they have long fingernails, they may hit the a name above the one that they really mean to hit first with the tip of their fingernail instead of the pad of their finger, and that could be what's causing the votes that way.
Then what we need is well-manicured voters when we use touchscreen machines.
That's true, yep. You need that. What they really need to do, I mean, that's not an excuse. What they need to do is spread the names further apart. If that's a problem, and I'm not convinced that it is, but if that is a problem, then they need to spread the names further apart on the screen to keep that from happening.
Just
let it continue happening. If that's what is, in fact, happening, they shouldn't be able to use that as a reason.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And, John, we have about a minute before we go to a break. Why don't you give us a couple of headlines from some of the voter integrity issues that you've been blogging about this week, and when we come back, we can talk about them in a little more detail.
Sure. A new report from down in Arkansas that pretty much land-based ES&S, and also today the Cuyahoga County report, Cuyahoga County, Ohio report is out, and it discusses specifically the failures in the county in their primary. And
yes, that's Cleveland.
Uh-huh. Scathing. Yes,
okay.
Cleveland.
All right, well, let's work with those headlines, and we'll air those stories out as we continue with John Gideon sitting in for Brad Friedman of bradblog.com today. If you have a question, you can join us. Lines are open right now. 831-899-5792 on the Central Coast. Or you can call me toll-free. It's 888-579-2540. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
DNS Auto Sales in Monterey, family-owned for 30 years, is where partnership works. Whether you're a first-time buyer and need a safe economy car, or looking for a truck or SUV or a classic, they have it all. Call ZNS before you make that final decision. ZNS open every day at 1179 Del Monte Boulevard between the Navy Postgraduate School and Lake El Estero. High-quality used cars at the very best prices. ZNS Auto Sales, where partnership works.
Tom Hartman.
We have given our electoral process, the franchise by which democracy happens, the most vital part of the commons by which we administer the commons, we have privatized it. We have turned it over to private for-profit corporations.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
And they have no damn business telling us how we voted.
The new Radio Free America, Tom Hartman. Weekday mornings 10 to noon on KRXA 540.
Come on in, and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything so tasty, you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a pillar affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus stew. A side of couscous and a baba ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7. Every day, have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery in PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
KRXA 540 takes a look at your traffic. It's 546 now on this Friday afternoon. Here's Larry Olson.
SoCal, San Jose Road at North Summit, injury crash. Pickup truck hit a tree. Crews are still blocking one of the lanes as they try to clear this up. Getting there, South 17th slowing from Hamilton Road and Campbell to Bear Creek Road in the Santa Cruz Mountains. Accident, Watsonville, Carlton at Highway 129. SUV ran off the roadway, landed in a ditch. A tow truck is en route. 152 at Pole Line Road, solo car crash on the right shoulder. Minor injuries have been reported. Your great Las Vegas getaways begins by visiting Luxor.com. Unforgettable days, exciting nights. It all starts by visiting Luxor.com, your website for exclusive offers to the pyramid. I'm Larry Olson with traffic on KRXA 540.
Thank you, Larry. I really appreciate it. And Casey's got your traffic every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m. on the Stephanie Miller Show. He uses it to get warmed up for the show from 9 to 10 a.m. It's all right here on KRXA 540. It's the Peter B. Collins Show, where we're partial to electric guitars and progressive politics. You're welcome to join us as we continue with John Gideon. 831-899-5792 is our number on the Central Coast. Or you can call me toll-free, 888-579-2540. And it's not too late for you to get in on our first anniversary giveaway. Yeah, it was last year, this week, 1 year ago, that we launched the Peter B. Collins Show on KRXA 540 in Monterey. And to celebrate, we're giving away a case of fine Central Coast wine. No boxes are involved. These are all in bottles, Stephanie Miller. It's from select vintners in Monterey County and the Santa Cruz Mountains, courtesy of our friends at Monterey Bay Wine Company. To enter, just drop me an email. Send it to peter at peterbcollins.com. Include your name, address, a daytime phone, and indicate you're 21 so I don't get busted. And tell me your most memorable moment on the Peter B. Collins Show of the past year. One entry per person, please. If you don't have email, send me old-fashioned snail mail. Box 100, Mill Valley, California, zip 94942. That's P.O. Box 100, Mill Valley, California, 94942. We'll hold the drawing and announce the winner on August 1st. And, John Gideon, just during the break there, I was scrolling through Brad Blog, and I have a couple of quick questions. One is that I have seen on the Internet an interview that Brad did with Robert F. Kennedy, Jr. I think Brad sent it to me. Do you know if that's been posted on the blog? Because I didn't find it.
He did post an interview. I believe it was done by someone else whose name right now escapes me.
Well, it looked like Brad and a guy named Tom both did the interview, but that's what I read. And
right.
I didn't want to tease our listeners unfairly, but if you check Brad's blog over the next few days, perhaps Brad will post that somewhere from the road. The other item is that you have a blog posting from a couple of days ago about the McKinney primary in Georgia that we were discussing just before the break. And in addition to the vote switching that I talked about, your piece indicates that there were other anomalies as well. Give us more on that. Said there were memory card problems.
Yeah, and that seems to be a normal thing now. I hate to say it, but there are memory card problems all over the place, and there was certainly. There were other problems. Of course, the state of Georgia is going to make it out like this is a completely successful election, but there were memory card problems and machines that broke down in the middle of the election, middle of the day. They had problems starting up at the polls in some places and having to turn people away in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
It's just about become status quo for
SOP, standard
yeah.
operating procedures.
That's it.
To the phones we go. Pat from Eureka, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show with John Gideon.
Hi, how you doing?
Not bad.
I was going to say, and this kind of doesn't apply to the smaller elections, but I was just thinking that, you know, every state decides its own things. That's part of the reason the way the Constitution came about, until it starts affecting other states, and that's why we have, like, interstate commerce laws, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
And so I'm thinking that at least on the presidential level, why can't we apply that same principle that, you know, these elections go beyond state lines and make a uniform law that then says this is the way things need to be done?
Oh, well, Pat, I fully support your notion, and that's what I was driving at with Senator Bowen when we ran out of time about 20 minutes ago.
Okay, I'm sorry.
And that is that you know, we learned this in Florida, that there was not a uniform process for counting the votes to begin with, much less a recount. And that was the challenge that the Florida Supreme Court wrestled with, And ultimately, I believe the excuse that was used by the Supreme Court for not counting all the votes. So I agree, not only at the presidential level, I think that we have to have uniform standards for the key aspects of voting. If a local jurisdiction wants to use a purple ballot or a green ballot, things like that don't matter to me. But the very serious protocol issues, for example, what Brad has encountered in the effort to get not a recount, but a hand count, an actual count of the paper trails and paper ballots that were used in the District 50 here in California in June. And he's getting a quote of over a dollar a vote to count in San Diego County. And in Orange County, which is a much bigger population, the cost is about 14 or 15 cents a vote. So that's just one example of things that should be uniform and transparent to every voter. John, you want to add to that?
I agree. Right now, federal elections, there are guidelines, specific guidelines that have to be followed for federal elections. State elections and local elections and so forth, it's up to the states and counties how they want to do those. Unfortunately, when you have, talking about local elections, when you have local elections and you've now got these electronic voting machines that have been brought in, it's now going to cost a school board or a port commission or somebody like that thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars potentially more in order for them to hold an election just to raise funds to be able to do something. So they're going to have to now jack up the amount of money that they want to commensurate with the cost for holding those elections, because now they have to bring in electronic voting machines and use those.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I just find it ridiculous in this day and age why this is even an issue in the first place.
But you're right. It should not be. We should be able to trust the validity of our elections. We should not have to be concerned that the voting and the technology used to count the votes is now outsourced to corporations that are not accountable to the citizens who conduct the vote and who participate. So there are many serious issues, and you're right. It all should have been solved a long time ago.
And the technology that was supposed to make this easier is actually being used to hijack the process.
Yeah, in many cases that's right. Thank you, Pat.
Thanks, Pete.
John, one other example is the provisional ballots that were introduced as a requirement in federal elections as a part of the Help America Vote Act. And many people thought, well, that's going to be a way to, extend the franchise to people who don't have the right registration or paperwork on Election Day. But what we've seen in the hotly contested battleground states is that provisional ballots were used as a way of rejecting votes and preventing people from participating.
Yep, that's exactly right. There's no doubt about that. They have definitely, they've reworded everything, so to speak, and turned the tables on the voters in order to be able to disenfranchise as many voters as possible. They use these, and then they say, well, if you're not qualified to vote at this polling place, or you don't have your proper identification or whatever, so I just fill this provisional ballot out, and then they don't count the provisional ballots. They just decide somewhere along the line that they're not even going to count them because they say it's not going to matter. So people's votes aren't being counted.
Yeah. Now let's turn to the report from Arkansas and the ESNS machines.
They really had a disastrous. Anybody that's been following Brad blog knows that I wrote a whole string of blogs called the train wreck articles, and a big part of that was the problems that they had in Arkansas in their primary. And here we are now. Finally, the state hired a group to come in. And they went in and they dug through everything that was going on, and they got testimony and statements from election officials in the different counties, and their summary of this whole thing was, or the results of this, is that they suggested to the state that they need to go back and negotiate their contract with ES&S. I mean, people have said ES&S was too busy running helter-skelter between Little Rock and Omaha. The result was a woeful lack of communication with the counties. That was a statement from one county official. And we received information that the ES&S project manager in Little Rock was overwhelmed from at least mid-April until relief and replacement resources arrived in early to mid-May. Emails indicate that the Secretary of State's office notified ES&S of their resource constraints and severe schedule slippages in mid-April and requested immediate action on this issue. It's just, you know.
So they saw the train wreck coming and didn't get out of the way.
They saw the train wreck coming, and nobody did anything about it. And what ended up happening was that counties actually violated federal law because they didn't have accessible voting machines for voters with disabilities and other issues because, and certainly violated state law because they didn't have all their voting machines. They ended up having to print, either have a local printer print up ballots, or they went to their copying machines and copied ballots in order to have enough ballots at the polls so people could vote.
And just a little over 30 seconds, give us the Cuyahoga County, Ohio update.
Cuyahoga County, a big, huge mess. And this was, again, a group that was brought in to investigate. And they found out, Brad talks about the sleepovers in California. And they ended up with 60 DREs, just one instance, 60 DREs that were sent home with election administration staff, so they could check the modems and make sure that the modems were going to work properly. And that's just one issue. I'm going to be blogging about this on Brad's blog and give the link to all this information so people can go to Brad's blog and look it up there.
Thank you, John Gideon. Great to talk to you today. We'll check you out again real soon.
Much.
That's John Gideon in for Brad Friedman today. Have a great weekend. This is Peter B.
Betrayals to you. Until we meet again, happy trails.
I am Attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am Attorney Sean Mills.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney.
I will travel to Israel and the Palestinian territories.
Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice leaves for the Middle East on Sunday, but she will not be looking for a quick fix. A ceasefire, she said, would be a false promise if it simply returns us to the status quo. Rice says they have to address the root causes of the violence. CBS News correspondent Dan Raviv has more from Tel Aviv.
Everything Rice said was exactly what Israel wanted to hear. No point of a ceasefire without lasting steps against terrorism. And Israel's top general, Dan Halutz, said the Secretary of State will be welcome when she comes to Israel early next week. But he added she doesn't have the right to stop the Israeli army. That's up to the Israeli government. There's almost universal support here for keeping on with the push against Hezbollah. But not a massive invasion.
I'm Robert Berger on the Israel-Lebanon border. Plumes of smoke are rising on a hill inside Lebanon. I can see the Israeli shells hitting there. About 10 Israeli tanks are here on the border awaiting orders to move into Lebanon. Israeli military officials say they're planning to step up ground operations in Lebanon.
But they indicate it will not be an all-out assault. one step forward, two steps back for utility workers in the St. Louis area.
We currently have about 570,000 customers in Missouri and Illinois without service.
Tom Fox of Ameren Power says they lost ground today when another storm system moved through. 200,000 customers were knocked out.
The good news is that we have more than 2,700 folks on the ground working, contractors and employees on the ground working right now. These folks come from seven states around the area.
And the National Guard has arrived in St. Louis to help people stuck in homes without air conditioning. Four U.S. soldiers charged with murdering three Iraqi civilians in May claim they were following orders. In sworn statements obtained by the Associated Press, the soldiers claimed they'd been ordered to kill all military-age males. A lawyer for one of the soldiers accused of raping an Iraqi teenager, then killing the victim and her family, says that when the men were interrogated, they were numb from the effects of combat, and their answers may have been suggested by interrogators. Actor Jack Warden has died. Over a career that started after World War II, he appeared in dozens